I'd like to call to order the May 23rd, 2016 regular meeting. Mr. Ellis, will you lead us in the Pledge of Allegiance?
The Pledge of Allegiance
to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. Mrs. Moak, roll call, please.
Mr. Bochinski? Mr. Buckles?
Here.
Mrs. Clark?
Here.
Mr. Alger?
Here.
Mr. Ellis?
Here.
Mr. Esperanza?
Here.
Mrs. Nelson?
Here. Mr. Bochinski is out of town on business, but he is unable to call in, so he will not be with us tonight. All right, superintendent reports.
Good evening, everybody. I'd like to start off my report by letting everybody know I had my last student for the day for this year at Abraham Lincoln. I'd like to thank Christine Katarba for opening her classroom doors and welcoming me in to be a part of her class for the entire day. It's always an incredible opportunity for me to go in and participate, see the work of our staff, and see how our students continue to grow academically and social emotionally. What struck me about this one was I was in there a little early. I got there about 8:10. By 8:15, kids are starting to move into classrooms, all classrooms. Work is starting. Kids know exactly what they're supposed to be doing. They're doing their attendance on the smart board. They're moving their emoji up to if they're going to have hot lunch or did they bring their work in. And then kids are transitioning into doing their journal off of a prompt that the teachers leave for them. So the students are writing. And all this is occurring before the 8:30 start of the classroom bell. But again, it is a hub of activity from reading, writing, math, science, social studies, Spanish, PE, music, sang a song, I ran a mile, I wrote, the mile was probably the most challenging.
What was the time?
Well, all I know is I got a lot of dots.
You got dots.
Every time I went around with the kids. And a group of kids ran with me, and it was mainly girls, and we just kept moving. And they're like, are we going to stop? I'm like, nope, we're just going to keep moving. We're not going very fast, but we're going to keep moving. And we'd have kids race past me or the group, and I said, watch, we'll end up passing them. And eventually, we ended up passing them. And so we just ran the whole mile together, took a selfie with all of our stamps on our hands. PE teachers come out because they were having a collaboration day. Both came out to cheer us on. I think to heckle me, quite honestly. I think that's what they were going to see if I actually was going to run.
Finish it.
And finish it.
And they wanted to be there in case you collapsed.
That was probably the students were there to drag me off the. But it was just a great day. One of the pieces that I noticed throughout each of my classroom visits or students for the day is the amount of writing that occurs. I was blown away in this first grade classroom. One, they start journal writing about 8:20 in the morning, and they don't stop until about 3:30 in the afternoon. It was incredible the amount of writing our students are producing and the quality of writing that our students are producing. Very impressive. Their teacher just wonderful. Working on the social-emotional aspects with students. They set a goal each day, their classroom goal around how do they want as a class, not individually, but as a class, what do they want to keep improving upon? Just a wonderful way to open the day with her class and to continue throughout the day because they stop, they check in on those pieces. Just a real special day, so I want to say thank you to her and to all my first grade buddies. It was, again, a wonderful experience and to see the school day through the eyes of the students. It's a unique one and one that I sincerely appreciate people opening their classroom doors to me. You know, as Christine's, she went in during her plan periods and the teachers were talking, so what's he like? And she reported back out to me, he's just a regular guy. Like, okay, well, that's good.
Yeah. Good students.
Well, I don't know about that. She didn't report on my quality of students.
Tell me that you did follow her instructions on the email prior.
I did. She I had to bring some things in to write from. I had to bring a book, and I had to bring my tennis shoes for the mile. So I was a good student at listening to directions.
Excellent.
It was. It was just a great day. And Ms. Katarba, if anybody knows her, what a gem. Like all of our other teachers. And it's really sweet. In Lincoln, all the first grade teachers are out, and I'm sure it's this way in all the schools. They're out there just welcoming kids. I mean, it's starting right at 8:15. That first bell rings, and we got kids in the school, and they're talking, they're touching base. And you guys know me. I'm horrible with names. These teachers... Hey, Cindy. Hey, Billy. Hey, Jose. Hey, whomever. They knew everybody in that hallway, if it was their kids or somebody else's. Just a real testament to our teachers and the commitment they make to our kids on a daily basis. So, absolutely loved it. Transitioning to another piece, sent an email today to our special education parents who came out a couple weeks ago to speak about special education in our district. Thank them for coming out and giving us their perspective. I'm working with staff on a next step where we're bringing people together to have conversations. I'm hopeful to get that out in the next few days. But again, I sincerely appreciate them wanting to engage us. And I'm looking forward to, and we're looking forward to, is partnering with our parents like we do in any other situation, but I appreciate that. But I will be communicating again, hopefully by the end of this week, even greater structure about it. Today's was very general. I'd like to recognize two teachers who've contributed to their field of expertise in one area in math and one in the area of writing. Lisa Buchholz wrote an article for Teaching Children, the journal is Teaching Children Mathematics, and the title of the article, A License to Think on the Road to Fact Fluency. And then Priscilla Whitty, who wrote for the Reading Journal, Teaching First Graders to Comprehend Complex Text Through Read Alouds. We have so many experts. And I love the fact that they're bringing their expertise not just to D41, but to the larger educational community. Very inspirational, impressive writing across the board by both these individuals. So I wanted to take a moment and recognize them. I know we recognize them in the District Digest, but I wanted to personally thank them for their contributions to both the field of reading and mathematics. The next piece is our long-range plan. The board administration have been working diligently through this, and I thought it would be much easier putting it up here so everybody could see it. But we've been working for the past few months on our long-range plan. And where we started was identifying their strategic priorities. They went into their indicators of success, and those are two pieces that we've accomplished so far. The next phase are for staff to bring forward key performance indicators or KPIs, and these are measurable values that are attributed to each of the indicators. So they will have a set number to say at X academics is the easiest one to give an example of. Third grade reading will have an X percent increase over the next 5 years. So that's what a KPI is. But the KPIs will be, you'll see one for each of the indicators of success. After that, we'll have baselines. So what are we currently at? And then targets. That end of the 5 years, where are we going to project towards? Measurement source. Again, from an academic perspective, it would be like MAP, ACCESS, something along those lines. In the human resources area, it would be along like HumanX, school perception, something along those for the measurement source. Action steps, how do we get there? How do we achieve those key performance indicators? How do we strive towards the strategic priorities overall. So I'll just give you a quick glimpse as to what the board has made some decisions on regarding strategic priorities and indicators of success. Strategic priority one, academic excellence, student learning and academic achievement. We'll create a positive and nurturing environment, which is foundational to student success. We'll enhance and support a culture of academic excellence while working to close the achievement gap. The indicators that follow under this, we will successfully prepare our students for high school and for an increasingly global society, establish and measure key performance indicators for academics, social-emotional learning, and to close the achievement gap, champion active collaboration among staff. Technology will support enhanced student learning. Priority two, facilities that enhance student learning. We'll ensure that our facilities accommodate and adequately support current educational needs and allow for flexibility to support long-term future needs. We will continually evaluate facilities and strategically plan for the maintenance of all buildings and grounds. The indicator, evaluate space utilization, ensure and evaluate level of safety and security for all schools, including fostering partnerships with civic agencies, implement plans for well-maintained buildings and grounds on a scheduled basis. Priority three, finances that support student learning. We'll realize the district's mission, and while utilizing resources responsibly and efficiently, we'll be respectful and mindful of taxpayers by evaluating and prioritizing spending. The indicators, establish an annual budget with a five-year forecast to prioritize cost containment and use resources responsibly. Engage the community relative to financial priorities. Evaluate spending for fidelity, impact, satisfaction, and efficiency. Strategic priority four, dedicated and talented staff committed to student learning. We will recruit, support, encourage retention of employees at all levels. We are committed to a thriving work environment that encourages staff learning, growth, and to have a voice in the decision-making process. We will strive to make District 41 an employer of choice. The priority or the indicators, staff is highly engaged in the work. They are proud of their work, feel valued, and are focused on the mission of the organization. High-quality professional development and mentoring opportunities are key to our success. Individuals are taught the skills and knowledge that they are needed in order to be successful in their school, in their role. Provide all teachers opportunities to engage the district beyond the classroom. Priority five, school community culture and climate to further enhance student learning. We'll enhance a healthy, productive, and collaborative relationship with school and district stakeholders. Those indicators increase parent engagement, ensure they feel connected to the staff and to the overall school community. Continuously improve a welcoming culture in each school community. Continuously improve satisfaction among students, parents, and students. Thank you. And staff. Thank you. Priority six, community engagement and communications. We will deepen trust with the community members who live in the over 10,000 households within the District 41 boundaries through comprehensive and transparent communication. We will seek input from all District 41 stakeholders. Those indicators, the community is informed about D41 practices, decisions, and operations. Enhances the district's understanding on the various community perspectives on school district topics. And improves stakeholder and community pride in D41. Those are those priorities, and generally speaking, I will never read a PowerPoint, but we are live streaming, and people cannot see that board. So I know I made every sin possible reading a PowerPoint, so for those, I apologize, but it was done intentionally. So that's what we've worked on. We've set those priorities and indicators of success. As I said, staff will be coming back to the board in the coming weeks on the key performance indicators. We'll have further conversation. We'll be engaging staff in the community as we go through this long-range plan process. Board, anything they want to comment on that, or did I do enough damage to that for everybody?
Nope.
All right.
That's good. Thank you.
All right. The long-range plan connects to the D41 model, and that's that next piece that I want to highlight. Because as we move into the long-range plan, we'll incorporate many of the aspects of the D41 model into the long-range plan. And you'll see those in our action steps. You'll see those in how we will attain those indicators of success and those strategic priorities throughout. The model highlights our vision, our mission, our commitments, our learner characteristics. But the model also brings focus to our planning process, which is vital to our work in D41, and how standards are foundational to our work. When we start our planning process, we start with our students and the standards and build from there. It speaks about the importance of our professional learning communities, which answers the four questions of what do we expect our students to learn, how will we know they are learning, how will we respond when they don't learn, and how will we respond if they already know it. We have a focus on our differentiation and how critical it is to ensure that each child is seen just as that, as each individual child, and how do we continue to make progress with each child no matter where they're at. It speaks to the workshop model, conferring, assessments. And these are all key pieces in that world of differentiation and how we continue to move forward. And as we know, the importance of inquiry for all students, giving our students an authentic, real-world problems and exploration to solve. Tonight, to expand just a little bit more on PBLs, is Karen Carlson and our PBL coaches. So would you guys come forward for just a brief... Or right there. That's good, too.
I'm just going to introduce them, and then they just want to kind of share some of the highlights, general information, and... anyway, Kayla Wheeler, she's the PBL coach at Lincoln and Churchill. I can bring up Churchill. Christina Callum, the PBL coach at Forest Glen and Churchill. Hillary, Hillary is at Hadley, and then Sarah Rodriguez, who is at Franklin and Elizabeth Lincoln.
Okay, so in our second year of implementation of PBL, we've grown and we've made adjustments. We've been responsive to teacher and parent feedback. The coaches meet with teachers after PBLs, and we do a reflection. So some wonderful things have come this year out of those reflections with teachers. We've incorporated this year more design challenges and more engineering into the PBLs in the STEAM side. We've expanded the way our kids present to experts and also the tools they use. So every PBL is different, and it lends itself to a different way of presenting and a different tool. So as we grow and we learn, we're expanding in that area. We've worked with our teachers deliberately to calendarize the PBL so that they're spread out throughout the year. We've also worked really hard to incorporate the PBLs and embed them into the units of study so that the teachers are kind of replacing a unit with the PBL, and it's not an add-on for them. And next year, as we are going to be using some new resources, we will be able to continue to do that with our work. We've seen more implementation with PBLs this year and the solutions that the kids present. So with that, the kids are more engaged and enthusiastic about PBLs. And then next year, we're going to continue with asking teachers to do one PBL with their students.
Sarah already talked about how we are making adjustments as new curriculum resources come on board, like Eureka and like Lucy Calkins. Last year was our first year with STEM Scopes, and PBLs really dovetail very well with STEM Scopes. They have, for example, an activity that they call PER, Plain Evidence Reasoning, which is exactly the same type of inquiry work that we want our students to be doing as part of that PBL process. This summer, we're going to continue our work with the C3 framework, which is, I had to write it down because I can never remember it, College, Career, Civic Life. Mm-hmm. And that's the framework from which our Illinois social science standards are being built, and then ultimately a new curriculum that we'll be implementing in the schools. And that framework has a lot about inquiry skills that really lend themselves, again, to our PBL work, examining problems in the community, taking action with those problems. So this is all the same kind of things that we're having our students work with right now and getting those skills already. And please remember that all of our PBL work is grounded in the standards. If it's not connected to a standard, it's not worth doing for our students, for our teachers, for any of us. So we have to have that connection in order to make it a real-world experience where the students are applying their learning to authentic problems.
2 years ago when the district fully launched problem-based learning, we were a little bit nervous about a network. We knew we needed a network of people, and I'm pretty sure the coaches would agree we had zero people in our network, and it was important to create that. So I think we're all very proud of the network we've developed over the past 2 years. In our first year, we had local agencies that were from conservation groups, environmental protection, historical preservation, governance, education, parks, green space, agriculture, and business, and that was in our first year. We thought we had done a fantastic job of reaching out to our community and finding people who were willing to reach back to us. And then this year we added even more. We boosted the engineering group by adding water, storm, and product engineers, landscaping architects, meteorologists, woodland restoration, and community outreach. And all of these are people who have expressed an interest in working with District 41. They provided a problem to us and then agreed to work alongside with our students. Our students are really, as Christina said, benefiting from that connection to the real world, to having those experts come in, to visiting those experts as well. And I'm sure that we did not imagine when we began 2 years ago that we would have such a rich and vibrant network of experts.
And I have the pleasure, I have the pleasure of introducing Heidi Hand, who I have worked with for many years, but 2 years in this PBL role. And she has taken on this PBL with her students for 2 years, worked with the same problem, has started with her seventh graders, who are now eighth graders, and it has grown with the help of our partners, our Environmental Commission and the Glen Ellyn Park District. Beautiful community garden, and she's just done an amazing job, and her kids are absolutely fantastic. So they're here to talk to you today.
Give them the stage.
Maybe bring them up here some so people on the camera can see.
We have some 7th, 8th grade boys who are missing, but
they came in and then they left, so they might be out walking the park.
The boys were like,
It's the end of the school.
We were trying to come up with an idea, and the kids had given a vocabulary project, and as a model, they were showing the word was popper, and they were showing a young man who was holding a sign that said, just want to feed my sister dinner. And people kept walking by and not committing to throwing anything into the kettle. And the kids were quite disturbed by that, and they were trying to come up with a way to aid or stave off children's hunger.
Come on in.
And maybe I'll let Sam take over from here. I was saying how Penny had come up with the project, with the idea. So do you want to talk that?
So one of our peers, Penny Baltimore, was giving a vocabulary presentation on, I think the word was popper?
Yeah,
the word was popper. And her model, which is like a video at the end of the presentation that connects the word to a real life situation or like a funny skit or something. It was a Fousey Tube video about him going to a homeless man and giving him some money. And we're really inspired by that, and we thought that maybe we could do something to help the community around us that wasn't quite as fortunate as us. So Mrs. Han and I guess some other people, mainly Mrs. Han, got thinking, and we noticed that, hey, there's this place we play baseball, and there's a lot of dirt there that we can buy and put food in, and then we can give the food to the Glen Ellyn Food Pantry. And so that's what we've been doing for maybe a year now?
A little over a year.
That's the basic inspiration.
We kind of started to incorporate some of the standards. We started by reading a short novel by Paul Fleischman called Sea Folks, which was about a very diverse community in Cleveland and how they all came together to do a community garden and the benefits of working together. And all the kids were like, aha, I see where you're going. So we incorporated a lot of the reading literature standards. And Ms. Shoemate had made this connection with the Glen Ellyn Park District, and they were looking for somebody to kind of take over this piece of land in Rocket Ship Park.
Village Greens.
And it was a 30 by 30 plot, which to me didn't seem that large until we started planting, until we started weeding. And so the kids last year rode away for a grant to the Wheaton Garden Club, and they gave us money to go out and purchase plants for the garden. And Glen Ellen Park District came out and helped us. They rototilled soil for us, but it's really horrible soil. But things did grow, and we actually were able to take about 300 pounds worth of vegetables to the Glen Ellen food pantry, which I thought was pretty impressive. We also were featured on the Glen Ellen Garden Walk in June, and which was a surprise to us as well. And but the, you know, people came out and they were just like stunned that students had put this garden together and all. And it was very impressive. And at the end of the season, the seventh graders kept hearing us and seeing things up in the room. And they were like, what's going on? What's going on with this garden? And so this year we kind of brought them on board to do kind of our marketing for us. And some of the students rode away and got another grant from a foundation. And actually, we wrote to the DuPage Foundation that doesn't actually give money to schools in the end. And they got back to us like pronto to say, oh, we don't give money to schools. But somebody there had seen our what the kids had sent in, and they were pretty impressed by that. And so they said, I happen to know of another foundation that I can submit it to. And so we got our grant plan this year through that foundation. And so these guys are trying to market. They put together a website that you add volunteers at that work so that people can sign up for whether they want to water, whether they want to weed, whether they want to harvest, whether they want to replant because less needs to be replanted. So there are many different aspects. So the kids really had to do a lot of research. We also had a brochure that we passed out at the garden walk last year about pests in the area and what you can do organically to get rid of different pests. Some of the girls actually put a sheet together last year for people to pick up at the food pantry for like what to do with an eggplant once you get it. So we had all different aspects of writing involved, the research that went into it, and also when they had to present before people and talk to people, and even at the garden walk that day, we had so many older people come out, and the kids were like, oh, wow, they had so many questions. So it was being able to assimilate what somebody said to you, analyze it, and be able to formulate a new answer for the people. But the girls here have put together this Growing Glen Ellen Gardens for Giving. That's kind of our public service announcement. And so if you'd like to run that, Mr. Woods. A little shed there now too, so we can keep things there for people to use. And we have another group that went out to water tonight because, despite the fact that it was supposed to rain like every day last week, it never did. So I kept having to say, "Hey, four of our people have run out to the garden and water tonight." So, anything you guys want to add?
Along with the video, we also are doing announcements over the intercom in the mornings, and also an email sent to the entire school. So, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
And we also created a display to go in Yishi's window downtown, and that should raise awareness for it. And also posters have been put up in stores around there, spreading the word.
So it's a pretty all-encompassing.
We also contacted the environmental clubs at COD in Lombard West and asked them to see if they could sign up and volunteer at the garden, so they'd be interested in.
And they approached the church groups, religious organizations, different garden clubs in the area, scout troops. So they've done a great job of marketing this year. That was our downfall last year. It was kind of all on us. And I built a summer home over the winter, so I don't want to be here weeding. yeah, it's pretty amazing what they all did.
Would you mind introducing yourself so we know who's here?
I'm Lauren.
I'm Marissa.
I'm Zoe Imloff.
I'm Maya.
I'm Dylan.
I'm Sam.
Great. And seventh graders are?
The girls, four of us.
Okay. And then the eighth graders graduating. Congratulations.
John Clark was going to join us this evening, but he's babysitting.
Making some money. Making some money. Yeah. Oh, no, maybe you're not paying him. Yeah. That's true. Good point.
That's all free.
Good point.
Can I just point out how this comes full circle? Because we work a lot with Jennifer Umloff, which I believe would be your mom. Your mom, sorry. And we just nominated the Environmental Commission for Those Who Excel, and Jennifer's mom is one of the members of the Environmental Commission. So I like how this work is weaving everywhere in our community.
Yeah. Nicely done. Thank you all so much.
Congratulations. Yeah.
Glen Ellen Gardens for giving that my eighth grade class of seventh graders last year actually came up with all that, and one of the girls developed our logo and everything. So
so where can you get the website so people can sign up to?
That's going to be included in the school email. Okay. So you can click on a link.
Mm-hmm. Will you send it to us as well, so we can put it out for on District Digest and get an even broader reach?
Yeah, I think they're going to send it through all the elementary schools as well.
Mm-hmm. I like it.
I have a quick question for you. So last year it was 30 by 30, and you created 300 pounds, right? And you said this year it's 400 pounds?
Well, we hope for 400.
So are you using the same amount of property?
We're using the same amount of property, but one thing we learned was that we did what they asked us to do, and then we realized that we could have stopped twice as much.
Excellent.
Twice as many plants in that spot, despite what they said.
Yep.
Or you'd have to make up for what's going to, that natural selection thing where some of them just die off. So if you put in 20 tomato plants, your goal is for 15 of them to make it through.
Well,
so
if you put in 10 zucchini, you put in 5 tomatoes.
Typically,
And just as an aside, we never knew until we started researching that you are never supposed to plant cucumbers next to tomatoes, which is silly, since you throw them in the salad together.
Lessons learned.
Lessons learned.
That's great. Thank you.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you all. Thank you all. Next up is the enrollment report. Board, you have a copy at your table here. As we've tracked our enrollment projections, we track our enrollment projections through this document. It allows us to respond to heightened grade level concerns by the numbers in each area. To that, we've added a first grade section at Abraham Lincoln and a first grade section at Ben Franklin. We've got the additional. We have all the classrooms that we need for those additions. But we're keeping our eye on the kindergarten at Churchill, making sure that those numbers don't get any higher. But we will wait for the Churchill numbers until after the school year's done, and then we'll come back and make any final decisions we have on that piece. Board, any piece on the enrollment report?
Is it that we don't have the numbers from Churchill? Are those the ones we're still waiting on?
Is it the kindergarten numbers?
The K numbers.
Yeah, there are kindergarten numbers, so we're still lacking some numbers, registrations. We're about 99% from our students who were with us last year. We were at about a 99% registration rate, so we're real pleased with that. The online registration has made a huge difference, especially in the world for Lori as she's working through new hires. It gives her greater ability and confidence to be making those decisions about what classrooms are really hitting the hot points and ones that maybe we need to consider looking at because they're so low. We haven't had that in a long time.
Thank you.
Lori, anything to add to it?
Yes.
Please.
We are going to, the kindergarten numbers are live registration numbers, so we We switched that in terms of the projection last month. And as soon as the last day of school is over and the registration window closes, we plan to update the rest of the numbers to the real registration numbers that we have. So that would include withdrawals as well as new registrants from there. The first grade numbers, however, that you see at Lincoln and at Franklin, where there were kind of hot spots, are our real numbers.
Yeah, those are.
The registration, so we want to make sure we were confirmed before we added those two staff members.
Mm-hmm.
And those two staff members were part of the contingency that we built into the budget. So we are tracking what we've, quote unquote, spent in terms of that FTE and what we've allocated, making sure that we're doing our best to be equitable and also judicious in terms of when we add staff and when we don't.
Board?
I had a question about, I guess, at Franklin and Lincoln with adding a section for first grade.
Mm-hmm.
I know there's been some confusion about having space in the school. So do we have classroom space?
There are some classroom space. They'll have to shift some pieces around. But I know in both schools there are classrooms available for each one.
So are we losing anything that we need to be aware of, like from a facility standpoint?
Not from a classroom, moving... Possibly coaches like the STEAM Lab at Ben Franklin or in those kind of pieces, but there's room. There's room in the ends.
Mm-hmm. And then I know one thing, I don't know if you were going to, I emailed you about specialization. Are you going to touch on that? I had a question about that to tie into enrollment.
Okay. Yeah, we finalized that decision a few weeks ago that teacher specialization will be at that building level conversation. So if I have an odd section, how are we going to deal with that odd section at each of the buildings? And it's been decided that that will be handled at the building level to have those conversations.
And then are we also at the building level, they'll determine how students are grouped, whether you keep the morning students together in the afternoon,
yeah,
or if you switch them around. That can vary by school.
That can. In consultation with Karen on both of those topics, with Karen, Lori on both those topics, you know, just making sure that we thought about all the different ideas. And again, using that one chart that I brought to the board a few weeks back to say, have you looked at these? Will these work? How does this work within your building? Yes.
Okay. Well, and one thing I guess I'm going to ask.
Okay.
I'm the one that's concerned about the inconsistencies at the school. And, I would ask that. We kind of document what we did this year because
okay.
I know we did things different this year, what we're doing next year, and try to kind of monitor to help come up with a solution. You know, is this a good long-term solution, just letting the buildings operate?
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's fair.
Differently on it. Because one thing that I noticed from the enrollment report, which concerns me, is that I know we talk about it's just going to be, you know, here or there if we have a bump year, like at Franklin and Lincoln this year for first grade,
mm-hmm.
going up to five sections. And I don't know when those grades roll up to the older grades, maybe they'll go back down to four. But in looking at it, there is, from the enrollment report, 9% of our classes are odd number, are impacted with a teacher that would not specialize. If the schools move forward with having a teacher that didn't specialize teachable subjects, that would be 9% of our classes, about 10% of our teachers. I don't know how that varied. I think it was factoring kindergarten into there.
Okay.
So about 9-10% of our classes and our teachers. And really, it's going to, if you have a teacher that does not specialize teaching both subjects and you're switching students around so they can have two teachers, even though a teacher doesn't specialize, it's going to impact double the amount of students. So more like 20% of our students will have part of their day spent with a teacher that's not specializing. So I think it's a greater impact than we're being led to believe, and I do feel that we need to figure out if this is the right way to go about it. And the other thing, my biggest concern is actually at Churchill. If you look at Churchill, I think it's our school that has more needs than some of our other schools. We're talking about closing the achievement gap
mm-hmm.
with our long-term goals, and the way Churchill is structured, they have an odd number of sections traditionally. They run, mm-hmm. most of the other schools run at four, Churchill runs at five.
Mm-hmm.
Right now with dual language, you have two in dual language and three, and we'll say gen ed. And dual language is not impacting this because even if you didn't have dual language, you would still have five sections.
Mm-hmm.
So
mm-hmm.
it is not,
yeah.
it has nothing to do with dual language. But, right, you have at every single grade level, I think except for fourth right now because dual language hasn't rolled up to fourth yet, But once dual language rolls up through fifth grade, we are going to have an odd number of sections in that gen ed of three. So this is not a, this is not at Churchill, this is not a problem that, well, it might happen if we have a bump year. It's a reality that's impacting really a quarter of the teachers at Churchill. Mm-hmm. Would not, I mean, if you, a quarter of your teachers are not going to specialize, and if you keep flipping the students around, I know Churchill is actually the school this year that didn't, they kept the same group of mm-hmm. students mm-hmm. with the teacher, but if you switch kids around, there would be half of the students at Churchill are going to have part of their day spent with a teacher that doesn't specialize. And I think that if we truly, you know, if we believe in specialization, I think we owe it, especially to Churchill, to figure this out, because a big portion of their teachers are not going to mm-hmm. be specializing. A quarter of their teachers, and that's a lot. It's mm-hmm. not, this year we have a bigger first grade. So
I appreciate that. And at Churchill, Karen and others are looking at different ways to maybe address that piece, because they recognize that 3-2 split at Churchill, 3 with 2 with the dual, 3 in the regular. So we're looking at some different ways to possibly address that. So we've seen that, and I'll keep you updated on that.
Mm-hmm. I know that one of the things I brought up when we were discussing this 2 weeks ago was also to, and you had already mentioned this was happening, but that the teachers who were keeping the students this year, one teacher in particular I'm thinking about at Churchill, to be able to give the feedback on how it worked, what worked, you know, what she would do, you know, continue to do, stop, you know, or shift in some way. So I think that, again, having it in the buildings, their knowledge of the ebb and flow of their students who are unique, again, from building to building is really crucial, and to, you know, again, keep it top of the mind.
So but we'll definitely document how we've been doing the sections, how it impacts each of the buildings. We'll bring that back, and then we'll bring back the Churchill piece if we have some resolution to it in the coming days.
And I think at an administrative level, we should be looking at performance mm-hmm. of students. Is performance of students being impacted by
okay.
it?
Thank you.
I had questions on PBL too, but
go
I
for
think
it.
We were asking questions.
No, you, yeah.
Yeah, I was.
No, go for it.
I was falling asleep.
You jumped.
No, you're good.
I wanted to ask. I guess I didn't know if I should ask you or ask the coaches, but I know the coaches mentioned, gathering feedback from staff and parents and students. But I know that some of the feedback we got from the survey from staff was they were looking to, some of them said, reduce these PBLs, and there was a large number at Hadley. I don't know if that's because, I don't know if we do it in all the subjects at Hadley anymore. I know we did last year, but if there's, what our thoughts are on that. It looks like, you know, if you look at reduce these PBLs, I feel like Hadley and our early elementary teachers, you know, there's a lot of them saying reduce, and we're only using one a year, so I don't know what that means, because it's different, like,
mm-hmm.
It's different from return to a traditional practice of not using problem-based learning. So there's definitely a difference. So I'm curious why they're saying reduce.
And this was after the first year.
Well, this was
this is the recent
that we just did.
So this is this year's survey.
This is this year's survey. So I'm just curious.
Maybe Hillary can speak to
their feedback as to what and why they're.
Maybe she can't. Never mind. Yeah.
And I think what they were kind of referencing with that, and I think they alluded to it. So an example is trying to link it more directly to what's within your current content. So I'll use the example of Ben Franklin in kindergarten. Kindergarten teachers actually field tested Lucy Hawkins, and they were able to do their PBL using what they were studying with the NJS assigned standards and with Lucy. So they just kind of built it into that, so it wasn't going to be this add-on. They had done something on the blank of these turtles, and they had to pick an animal. So it kind of all interconnected, and so it wouldn't be kind of like this standalone sort of thing. Mm-hmm. And I think we are trying to, they also talked about kind of those engineering design challenges in that. I think that freed up teachers a little bit more. Like some of the science teachers at Hadley did more of a design challenge than kind of the PBL that they had experienced that first year. And so when they talked about the feedback, when they reflect with the teachers, is when they try to gather more of that, for lack of a better word, kind of that intimate knowledge of, you know, their particular PBL, what went well, how would they change, that sort of thing. And, you know, we just last week rolled out that initial training with Lucy Hawkins, and within the writing units of study, we basically said, you've kind of got 3 weeks as we lay out the curriculum to use for a PBL. You can kind of put it anywhere. And we talked about integrating them with science and that, but I think that helped at our literacy meetings to be like, okay, and that's kind of this doable, we're still connected to standards, but then we'll probably look at some of the new social science standards to link it to, because we don't have to officially do it. So I think they're trying to respond to those individual needs. I don't know if you guys want to.
Yeah, I may also, what I'm thinking is that I think when teachers first started doing PBL work, it was new to them, it was maybe a little scary because there is a certain amount of letting go and being a facilitator, and so the PBLs would take maybe 6 weeks till the teachers felt, okay, we're ready to go to panel, we're ready to implement. And now the second year we're finding that we can shorten that amount of time. Mm-hmm. So perhaps when they say reduce, what they're thinking is, you know, I don't want to do a 6 week unit of study, I want to try to tighten it up. And that's why having it developed in Lucy Hawkins, where there's this very specific whole, that's really going to encourage teachers to realize you can do this PBL work if you connect it to standards, and it doesn't have to take 6 weeks. You know, it can be much tighter, and then the students, you don't mm-hmm. lose their attention, and everything flows a lot smoother.
I want to build off the PBL for a minute. And Hillary left, but maybe you guys can help me out. We talked about the fact that from year one to year two, it seemed like you got a lot more involvement from, I think you said, the community. One of our goals in our long-range plan that Dr. Gordon just went over is to make sure that we can reach out to more of the community and get more of the community to get involved in our schools and understand what's going on. Do you feel like that group that you're reaching out to, are they Glen Ellyn community members? Are they people from the town, or are they mainly people from outside the town? What are you seeing for the mix?
I think they're mainly from in town.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah, because we've made a lot of connections through parents. We bring parents in through the vetting process, so that gives parents an opportunity to see the PBL work that their students have been doing. Mm-hmm. And then we bring them in as professionals as well as part of our expert panel. So.
Okay.
I would say that also you could extend our community to the county. We work a lot with DuPage County Services for the mm-hmm. Forest Preserve, the DuPage Water Commission. So I do feel like we started sort of, if we dropped a pebble in the water last year, it was this circle. Now we're building that circle further out, especially in connecting with engineers. We had a hard time finding engineers within the community who had the time and the willingness to work with us. So that's a direction we had to spread out a little bit. We talked to universities. We talked to engineering firms that were beyond our village community boundaries.
I did have to go to St. Louis this year to find an aerospace engineer.
Okay,
thank you. Question, yeah.
Are there plans? I know, you know, at one point we were talking about doing more PBLs. Are there plans to expand it beyond one?
It's really about that one, but it's also about ensuring that inquiry is built into everything that we're doing, that we see inquiry in everyday life in our classrooms, that questioning. Where we're at with the PBL is that one, and that we would highly encourage teachers to try a second one or a third one if they choose, but one is where we're at and probably where we're going to be for the next couple of years. I don't see changing that anytime soon. It's about quality, ensuring that we have great quality with that PBL. Because as I said, the last thing we want is a PBL that doesn't meet all those requirements. So we want to continue to build that quality and really hone in our skills around that. And I think oftentimes, I've heard it at public comment and in other outlets, highlight of the panel and PowerPoints. And I would say that is the tip of the iceberg with PBLs. The work under the water that you don't see, the vast majority of the work are all the thinking, the conversation students are having, the work with the standards, all of that engagement that's happening. I think we hear panel and PowerPoint. Mm-hmm. PowerPoint is something that we don't encourage. Did we in the first year? Absolutely. But it goes to our evolving process over time. Mm-hmm. But as we sit here, it's one. I don't see that changing anytime soon, but it's about the quality, rich experience.
Elementary, you do two, I guess, per grade, because one is literacy, one in, and Hadley is
kindergarten and first as well.
In kindergarten first. Mm-hmm. At Hadley, is it literacy, science, social studies, and math?
Math, it was just at sixth grade through the extension.
Okay.
Because their time shifted to 45 minutes. So that was the feedback we got.
Have we given any thought to, I know there's a lot of talk about, true PBL, this integrating off subjects. Have we given any thought to, sixth graders at Hadley or fifth graders at the elementary school, instead of having a PBL in literacy and a PBL in math, combining it in one, doing one, project that they, at the culmination at the end of the year that they work on?
Like a capstone project.
Right,
something.
Would that... have we given any thought to that?
We've thought some about that, but it's really about bringing all those lenses into your own PBL. So you, as a teacher, you continue to bring that social sciences lens in, that economic lens into it, all those different lenses. But we have seen when we've tried to integrate it across, it becomes this huge, huge process where tons and tons of kids are having to go through the vetting process. And it is challenging, especially at Hadley, when you have such a large grade level. Hillary, the first year, that was one of the struggles with these large groups of kids all coming through. It's much better when it's about that one teacher working through that process at a time. I know Karen was...
Well, we had a couple grade levels who actually did that, where they did integrate, and it happened to be...
I have a second grade, and my feeling about the integration, I echo what Paul said about the concern about so many people involved that there maybe isn't ownership if you're going to go across curriculum like that. You also have to have the ability to have common PLC time so that the planning can occur. I had one grade that had that. They had common PLC time, and they were able to find a problem that fit really well with both standards, both science and literacy. And they were enthusiastic about it. I mean, that's another key to this whole thing. If the teachers aren't going to be enthusiastic about it, it can be the best problem in the world, but it's going to fall flat.
Yeah.
And in this case, it was the perfect storm. I had the teacher enthusiasm, I had common PLC time, and I hit standards across the board. So we did that.
So is it a non-starter for us? No. I think that explanation is a great one. Mm-hmm. Everybody's got to be fully invested in it to be able to do that. Yeah. So, please.
I'm going to just piggyback off this because the question I had, I know when this was initially kind of envisioned, it was kind of all PBL by year five, and we've adjusted to that based on poverty survey and that kind of stuff. We hired the number of PBL coaches based on getting to that point. So,
Did we? Not based off of the 5 year piece. It was based off of how do we work with all of these teachers throughout the district to support each of our teachers, even with them doing one.
We would be increasing each year. So technically, by year three, I think the original plan was to have at least three PBLs right at each grade level. So that would mean that the PBL coaches, I'm sure we were planning on having them give them enough support right at that level. Since we're not doing that, we've seen the uncertainty with the state of Illinois budgeting, just something to think about for the budget, at least in my mind, is, the reduction in PBL coaches. So do we actually need all the PBL coaches if we're staying at one?
I believe we do, but that's a budget conversation that we'll get into for the following year, because all personnel are... that would have been a conversation earlier, but I appreciate bringing it up. I know, I get what you're saying.
The state of Illinois, and we saw, we've gotten some more emails today that it's really uncertain. We could get a lot of funding, and in my mind, based on where we were heading, we're not heading there anymore. So, at least now for a number of years. So, in my mind, we don't really need that many PBL coaches. So that would be an issue I'd probably raise at the budget.
Okay.
Can I pick up on that with an observation as well? One of the things I was glad to hear about is we had year one, which is your startup year, and a little bit of your testing when you're looking at your learning process. Year two, which is where we are now, I think did a good job of listening to the feedback from teachers and some of the challenges, certainly with anything that's brand new. The whole calendaring piece, I know that came up, so I was really glad to hear the embedding of that. because anything that's new, and I'm speaking at this even with changes in my work at the graduate school, is you put it off to the very end, and then you're hitting a deadline, and you've got to rush to do it. And that was not the way that the program was envisioned. And I understand that as a teacher, you are, you know, or human being, it's human nature to, you know, to do that sometimes. I get it. But what I'm hearing, and a little bit of the, and we'll have that conversation, but the challenge to what you're saying, Kurt, is that as you grow a program and it gets more immediate and gets more intricate, you in fact need more support in order to deal with, even in year two, I hear you saying, the level of network that you have and the complexity with that. Because if we're bringing in these partners, and that's one of our strategic priorities, then we want to make sure that those partnerships are validated for them, and that there are enough, you know, there's enough people involved in making sure that those relationships work as well. So I hear what you're saying, and we're always with a lens on how are we forecasting need and interest, and programs grow, and we've talked about this before, but the programs drive the facilities and the dollars. So it's figuring out how to do that balance. Not an unworthy conversation, but I think that there's another, you know, side to it. Well, but we're really glad to hear about the calendar, too.
Can I add something here quickly? Just from a point of order, I don't think we were going to have a PBL conversation, and I think Eric, all of you are
right. And I was just going to say we're moving into a budget discussion.
Can we put this on an agenda?
Yeah, that's what I was going to say.
It's
all in the deep
right. We're shifting now.
We're certainly within realms talking about.
We are. But we're shifting. I want to be respectful of what Patrick is saying, and that we're shifting into a little bit of that budget discussion. But points taken. And
I would just add.
And thank you.
That we were not on the board when obviously the PBL coaches were added. But and I wish Joe was here, because I know that he's made comments about the fact that, at least his understanding, and he can correct us when he comes back. Mm-hmm. But his understanding was that, in general, the PBL coaches were going to go away because as time shifted, they would no longer be needed. So,
and
we have to give our teachers some credit. I mean, we just heard the superintendent talk about how great they are.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they can handle that.
I hear what you're saying, Kurt. You want this to be a discussion for budget. I get it. We'll put that on there.
Well, I think we need
last comment, then we'll move on.
Important point to just add to what Kurt said. I mean, if we just look at our staff right now, we have a lot of retirees this year and
17.
Next year.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, maybe, you know, the PBL coaches as a resource would be better off, you know, in the classroom.
You know, that's an administrative decision.
But it's just a thought. I mean, I think there's...
Well, the PBL
I think the superintendent's hearing
that. And the budget is a discussion by the board. We control them on that.
The budget is a discussion by the board. Staff is a discussion by the board.
I would wrap it up by saying I have strong support for our PBL coaches, the work they do on a daily basis with our teachers to improve the educational outcomes for our students. They make a difference in our school. So I appreciate every one of them and the work they do, and I appreciate the students coming forward and our conversation tonight. Next up, board reports, and then.
Speaking of retirees, I know that Stephanie brought hers as well. Last Wednesday, May 18th, under board reports, the annual staff recognition event was held. I see several faces of folks that were there and honored as well. We have 17 retirees from the district this year, and I want to point out a 35-year service recognition of a retiree as well, Patricia Hartnoss, retiring from Lincoln School. So 35 years, lots of tenure. And also sent, I know the board received it, but a lovely goodbye letter as well. Just for the record, I want to announce that those who excel awards, Colleen Costello, Educational Support Personnel, Alexis Detmer, Certified Support Personnel, Karen Dimmitt, who's here tonight, Lifetime Achievement, Gabriela Escobar, Educational Support Personnel, Kelly Lewis, Middle School Teacher, Gail Minkus, Administrator here at Central Services, Carolyn Wagner, Educational Team, and the Glen Ellyn Environmental Commission Educational Team, which was referred to earlier by Heidi Hand, the parent of two of our seventh graders here. So those are those who excel awards. And my thanks to Kurt and Stephanie for being able to make time to be there as well, and congratulate everybody, too.
That was a nice night.
Yeah, it was a really nice night.
Thank you.
Yeah, really nice night. And thanks to Lori for hosting as well. Yeah, so there's a team effort. Your staff does a beautiful job.
Well, and Erica and stuff kind of messed stuff up, but
well, we handed out 10, yeah, we handed out 15-year awards to 20-year people, but we fixed it. It was a quick
moving. I had no idea what they were even doing at that point. I was so confused.
It was quick moving, naming those names. There were a lot of them.
The MC was moving us.
Yeah. One of the quick board report, and Kurt just alluded to it, but there is in the state legislature now trying to do something with a pre-K-12 budget before they leave. As part of the funding formula. This is, again, ongoing, constant back and forth. But I want to point out something that's kind of interesting and encourage. I know we've talked about joining on LEND, which is an organization that this district belongs to, that is part of an alliance of educational practice and efforts down in Springfield. To join the Action Network so you can get your own alerts as community members. It's really helpful to see what's going on. But right now, there is another funding model being proposed along with Senate Bill 231, Senator Andy Menar, who has also adapted his, and it's on evidence-based funding, which is a more holistic and long-term funding model. So I want to encourage people to maybe Google that and get a little bit more information. But that's being presented as well to the state legislature, and they're talking about that. That funding model, just to highlight this, is the brainchild of two school board members, Barrington and Oak Park River Forest, I believe. Oak Park Elementary, 97. Just a really well-done, holistic look at education funding that will not need appropriation from the state legislature, which Senate Bill 231 needs. So, again, we continue to talk, nothing decided, but lots more work to do, so we'll keep people updated on that. Any other board reports?
I actually went to the Churchill PTA meeting on May 10th. And they had a good meeting, talked about a lot of different things, just a couple of highlights. They did their elections for next year. They talked about the Glen Ellen Children's Resource Center is looking to expand at Churchill, and they're trying to raise $200,000 in funds, I believe. I have that correct? Which is 2 years.
2 years of operation.
2 years of operating expenses. Yes. So they want to get 2 years worth before they start, I think. The thinking is once they get it started and the community sees it, it will be self-sustaining. But just to be sure, they're looking to raise that much. And I can't remember how much they're at.
I think they're a little over $100,000.
Yeah,
right,
they were at 80-something, and now they're a little over 100.
But the Churchill PTA, actually, there's a group, what is it called? The community outreach part of the PTA has been real involved with trying to help figure out how to raise funds for the Resource Center. And as a PTA, they voted and decided they had some extra funds from the year, so they made a pretty generous donation to the Resource Center to help get that off the ground. And I know they're going to continue this summer with some fundraising efforts for that.
I think we all got this in the mail. It was through GECRC, but this was a summary of the Churchill program, so this was helpful.
Yeah, so they ended up, their PTA donated $9,500 to the Resource Center, which was
very exciting.
And then the last thing, I just thought this was kind of a neat thing. They started, I think all the schools do this with the fifth grade, have a service project at Churchill. It's called Fifth Grade Gives Back. And Erica, correct me if I make any mistakes with this. But this year's senior class at Glenbard West is the first class at Churchill that did the fifth grade gives back.
That would be my son's class.
So they invited so the fifth graders at Churchill this year have kind of set up a special thing. They're going to host the seniors to come back to Churchill
tomorrow.
So May 24th.
That's sweet.
So I just thought that was
really cool. That's a good piece of highlight
that they did there at Churchill.
They used each of the students who are graduating this year, if they're going to college next year, to bring a pennant from their college, and they're going to put them up in the hallways, and they're going to keep kind of building them over the years as kind of an incentive and a reminder of, there's life beyond Hadley, there's life beyond high school, so be thinking early, which is, really cool. So, thanks for sharing that. That's great. Other board reports? Okay. All right. Public participation. Again, we made this change about two meetings ago, or three, I can't remember, but when you came in, there's a sign-in sheet that Mrs. Moak has either grabbed already or will grab speak tonight before the board and this group, so thank you for doing that. I'd like to remind members of the audience that speakers should identify themselves. Limit comments to 3 minutes or less if your comments have substantially been reflected in others. We'd ask in the interest of time that you forego them and that you provide the board with any copies of written material that you may have. And I say this each week or each meeting. Any materials you have, we welcome, regardless of whether or not you've made comment. Personal complaints, criticism about staff members, students, or other members of the District 41 community should be initiated privately with the appropriate district representative. We ask your personal consideration of this in your comments as well. Also, profanity, interruption, other interference with the orderly conduct of this business meeting are not permitted. All questions raised will be forwarded to the appropriate District 41 staff representative for a response, as a response is warranted, and if a member of the public provides the appropriate contact information. So you can make sure that Nancy has that as well. So, welcome. Nancy?
Karen Dimmitt.
Yes. Do you mind presenting from over here, because then the camera will pick you up
from
a little
here?
Bit. I think so. Is that, Mike, is that the best? Mm. We typically go from there, yeah. And then our microphones, yeah, Stephanie will move this mic over so it can pick up a little bit here.
Well, I can use my teacher voice.
You can.
You only need it for two more weeks.
Okay. So, good evening. My name is Karen Dimmitt. In 11 days, my teaching career of 36 years of full-time teaching in the classroom will come to a close. Mm. And 28 of those years have been in District 41. In District 41, I have worked under 5 superintendents, 17 principals and assistant principals, several assistant superintendents of curriculum and instruction, and numerous school board members. I didn't know how to count to all. Each of these individuals have brought their own ideas and initiatives with them into this district. Amid this sea of what I am calling educational change, the one constant was my teaching colleagues, those with whom I could share concerns, vent, laugh, cry, and with whose help ultimately find solutions to whatever problems I was encountering at the time. Mm-hmm. I have been active in the Glen Ellyn Education Association for many years, and for 5 of the last 8 years, I have been able to give back to my colleagues as co-president of GEF. In the current political climate, teachers' unions have been criticized even to the level of vilification. But in my experience, I have found the presence of the teachers' union to be at times the last bastion of defense for an individual teacher whose career would not survive without the aid of the union. By definition, the relationship between the administration and the union is adversarial. However, the open and honest exchange between these parties allows for a true give and take of ideas and concerns that ultimately create a stronger district when both sides listen to each other. At the end of the day, our union's goal is the same as administration: the best education possible for all of our students. GEI is a conduit from the individual teacher to the administration. Not all teachers choose to make use of that conduit, and that is their right. The union has created a structure on different levels, from individual buildings to the entire district as a whole, that encourages communication and problem solving aimed at dealing with small things so they do not become massive ones. My co-president, Mr. Brian Bonkowski, and I have heard from multiple sources, both from within this district and outside District 41, that we are not the norm. There are plenty of school districts out there in this state where administration and union are constantly at odds. The success of GEA is quite remarkable, since it is achieved through the volunteer efforts of teachers who stand up to serve all of us. Finally, please know that while GEI is a way for teachers to have a voice in District 41, I believe it's the primary way. It should not be the only way. The district needs to maintain an environment when all in the district, faculty, staff, and administration, feel free to express themselves without fear of any retribution for views that are not shared by any authority. Finally, I will always treasure my 28 years in District 41 and being allowed to share my love of both the French and Spanish languages and cultures with, and this is a very rough estimate, about 3,500 Harvard Junior High students.
Congratulations. Thank you.
Jeff Cooper.
Good evening, Mr. Cooper.
Dr. Gordon, I'm still waiting for my FOIA response, although there are still a little less than 4 hours left until today.
And you'll have a response?
I hope so, because I would hate to see have to spend my morning tomorrow talking with Lisa. But 9 o'clock comes tomorrow. I'll go ahead and do that. We wouldn't be discussing this if Mr. Bronkowski and Ms. Diamond thought that you wouldn't tolerate the nonsense that has been going on. There would be nothing to FOIA, but based on what is going on currently, that I don't have a response to it. It's obvious that there's something that has to be talked about that may be part of the response to me. If there was nothing, I wouldn't be up here tonight. The same goes for Mr. Let's see. So I said about they wouldn't do anything if you didn't tolerate nonsense. The same goes for Mr. Dibley. If you wouldn't tolerate, they wouldn't participate. And I don't have a problem with the union going ahead and doing most of their activities. My problem is when they go ahead on our time, take some taxpayer dollars, that time frame, the kids are supposed to be taught, and they go ahead and they do these efforts behind closed doors. If I don't stand up here and say this, nobody knows what's going on here. So, I hate that it is necessitating expenditures to your attorneys. But once again, if Mr. Bukowski, Ms. Diamond, and Ms. Kellum knew that their boss ran a clean and tidy ship, they wouldn't be scurrying around in darkness plotting against the citizens of District 41, of which
30 seconds.
None of the three are. So their shenanigans won't affect them adversely financially, only us if we don't stop them. This sham of theirs won't vet the best possible candidates for the district. It will vet who wants to play softball with them. Maybe they can find someone else willing to give them 7.5% annual increases in the next contract. So, Dr. Gordon, you allowed Bunkowski's cronies and minions...
Can you summarize?
Yeah, it's my last two sentences here. Mm-hmm. You allowed them to disparage two board members and some of us in the public in that survey without vetting if they live in the district. Now it appears that you allowed political activities on school grounds and possibly during school hours. When are you going to stand up and say...
Thank you, Mr. Cooper.
I hope soon.
Thank you.
My last sentence. You're leaving
a combustible
trail. You've allowed a number of people. You read a letter 2 meetings ago, 4.5 minutes.
Mr. Cooper, please finish. Thank you.
Okay, last sentence. You're leaving a combustible trail behind you day after day. Please listen. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Cooper. Mrs. Moak?
Kathleen Meyer.
Good evening, Kathy. Welcome, Mrs. Meyer.
I just wanted to talk about problem-based learning tonight, and since everybody's been talking about the survey, I did a little looking at myself, and one of the questions, do you feel your child has or will benefit from problem-based learning? This was put to the parents. Only 15% said no. So the overwhelming majority of our parent population supports problem-based learning. Advice parents would give on continuing the use of PBL strategy, only 7% said return to prior teaching methods. And the significant majority want their kids to learn by PBL. So I'm a numbers person, those are the numbers. When I was a kid, I can't tell you how many times I heard my friends say that they would never use the things that they were learning. They didn't see any application outside of school. And so that they thought there was no point in learning it. And I think that PBLs are the antithesis of that. Our children are learning about real life issues and the application of their education towards those issues. My children and my friends' children, some are here tonight, report to us that they really enjoy doing PBLs and they take pride in the solutions they develop. The kids that were here tonight, I was so impressed. They clearly loved what they did. And when I asked my daughter, what's her favorite part of PBL. She said it was when my fifth grader said that she loves coming up with a solution. And my second grader said she loves doing the research. Problem-based learning teaches problem solving, critical thinking, creativity, all skills that our kids will need throughout their professional and their personal lives. They are learning that they can affect change, and the kids here tonight, that's powerful for them to know that they can do that. They also have learned a lot about teamwork. So. And I'll just close with a quote from William Butler Yeats. He said, "Education is not the filling of a pail, but the lighting of a fire." And I think that's what people feel.
Jim. Thank you. Mrs. Milk?
Lisa Weibel? It's evil.
Lisa.
Everyone says Weibel.
My name is Lisa Weibel. I have a second grader at Lincoln, and I wasn't fully prepared to talk today, but I do want to talk about the problem-based learning as well. My daughter comes home, and I just see the light in her eyes talking about composting pumpkins. I mean, something as simple as that. She was so excited. Her and her friend, which is Kathy's daughter, they made these pamphlets, like flyers, for the PTA, which I'm on the PTA board, made for the teachers, the principal, all about why we should use composting at our school. And for obvious reasons, we couldn't do composting at the school. But, I mean, it was just incredible to see them passing out their flyers, doing their research. They were really, really excited. And I never see that late in the kids as much as I do when they're actually doing something for the community and the world. And I think that it's really important to use the tools that you're going to use out if you're a board of education member or a CEO. You have to learn those now, and you have to be able to take a problem from the real world and say, okay, you know what? I know how to solve this problem, and I'm going to collaborate with my peers, because you have to do that as well. You're all peers. You have to collaborate. And my daughter gets to do that in second grade. She gets to think about the world, and I think that they should continue, and I'm just really happy with her positive attitude towards education. And so thank you as well.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Mrs. Milk?
Bruce Curry.
Good evening, welcome.
I just had two things. One is a follow up to Mrs. McCluskey's to the access data that's just out. Back during the January or December meeting, she said that the data was almost a year old. The access scores, which are what measures a child's language acquisition in English, bilingual students' acquisition, have just come out, and now would be a perfect time to analyze that data and see how our programs are doing. I know, as a bilingual teacher myself, I live and breathe by this data, and I know it's been very important to my review as a professional teacher, and I think it would be interesting if the board could look at that data and see how things are doing. I hear great feedback from the dual language program. It would be great to see data that goes along with that to see how it is doing. I don't think that data was presented, and I'd love to see that. The second point is I was pretty disappointed that a month after the task force got done with our recommendation, we found out that Hadley Junior High 2015 space utilization updates had been done in April of 2015. This was four or five months before we started on the task force, and we just got this analysis, which I think cost around $10,000, this afternoon around 2 o'clock. I really think it would have answered a lot of the questions that we had. I think if we could have talked to Brain Spaces, which were the people that did this study, we could have learned more or gotten their insight from it. And I'm a little disappointed that we're only receiving it today. I'm wondering why the administration was not transparent with this information. Again, it would have answered so many questions, and it would have really, I think, lessened the time that the task force took, because a lot of this analysis that we went over had already been done. I know everybody in in this task force. You know, we all work for 9 months, and we all are juggling families, work lives, and everything else. And I think it would have been really good if the administration had saved us that time and effort. Thank you.
Thank you.
William Schumacher.
Welcome.
I'm William Schumacher. I'm a 16-year resident of 1941 with 2 sons, one who's going through to West and one who's in Hadley. And as a D41 parent, I want to start out by apologizing because I haven't attended a board meeting in nearly 7 years. But I wanted to justify that lack of attendance by declaring myself a member of kind of a large group of D41 families who are fairly confident with the direction that the board and the administration, you know, are guiding the district into. And I'm only speaking up because I'm concerned that there's a vocal group of parents that are pressing for the abandonment of the recently implemented changes. When I say recently, it's been a few years. But, and they're pushing instead for kind of a return to the status quo. One of the primary arguments against such, you know, remaining changes as PBLs and teacher specialization is that we need to see more research, to see more numbers and data, that we shouldn't be using our children as guinea pigs. For kind of full disclosure, I'm a former teacher with my first degree in secondary education from the University of Illinois. And we were studying PBLs in the early 90s. They were first developed in the late 60s, so they've been around for quite a while. And there was an interesting article titled "Problem-Based Learning Motivates Pupils by Bringing Real-Life Dramas into Classrooms." And this article was in the Chicago Tribune in July of 1995. There are a lot of studies on teacher specialization as well. In fact, there's a really good Brookings Institute article that basically concludes that there are significant benefits from teacher specialization. And to keep within the 3 minutes, I'm just going to reduce it down and say that there's a lot of research from various schools, Fox Valley, Arlington Heights, Illinois Math and Science Academy. So the curriculum changes don't really feel that innovative, but feel more like kind of a game of catch-up. So please, I just want to say to the board and administration, please think twice before reducing or eliminating the improvements that have already been put into place, and know that there are a lot of residents whose silence is kind of due to our satisfaction with the D41 schools and the teachers, administration, and board.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Mr. Smoke, that's it? All right. Thank you very much.
So before we continue, to Mr. Curry, there was, the first time I heard that we did not have it as part, let me go back, the brain spaces. This is what I'm speaking about. Give a little context. Not inside my head here. The brain spaces piece was actually when I met with Kurt and Erica for a board president's meeting. Kurt brought it up. And I even responded, well, I think it's on the website, the facility's website. As I looked at it, it obviously was not. It was a complete oversight. It was not a piece that we're trying to hide from anybody. It was in our library of information that we were scanning and putting in. It didn't make it. I take full responsibility for it. I sincerely apologize. But there was no, there was not an attempt to not give the community task force any of the information. I apologize if that's how it appears, but that was never our intent. We had volumes and volumes and volumes of information that we uploaded. That was a piece that I missed. I take full responsibility. No other staff member. That is mine to ensure that all those pieces got uploaded. Mm-hmm. It's out there. Pieces that I appreciate about it are their recommendations were the community task force recommendations. Look at the pods. Look at a cafetorium. They call it a cafeteria / auditorium. We haven't taken our great language of cafetorium yet. Re-looking at those science classrooms and ensuring that they're the right size. But the point to my piece is I take full responsibility for that. That should have been there. It wasn't. And there are no excuses for it than right here. I needed to ensure that was there and it wasn't for the task force.
Thank you.
All right.
Okay, presentations, reports, and initiatives. But I'm bummed.
I'm bummed. Bum. David.
Good.
He's good?
What? Good.
He's leaving you.
He's letting you do it.
You'll indulge me just for a...
Yeah, please introduce you.
I brought these two big guys with me. You guys get to see me all the time. Mm-hmm. And if you haven't met him or seen him on the site, this is Adam Slotkis. Adam ran the whole project.
Yeah.
The deal.
Yeah. Well, to that point, there was an individual in my office when Adam was walking by, and they said, "Wow, that guy looks like he's getting ready to take care of business." They used other words, but...
So that's what he did, and, we feel very fortunate to be a part of your team and to be of service to the district, and a big part of our success has been Adam's work in the field.
Yeah.
I wanted to make sure
you
got a chance to meet him in person if you haven't, and for us to thank him for the work.
Absolutely.
That he's started.
So, thank you.
Great job.
And John, of course, you've seen from time to time. Time is right with construction. And he keeps that modest. Make sure that everything in the office, everything in the office works very well. So, and if you have any tough questions for me tonight, that's why I brought it.
Joe's not here.
Joe's not here.
Yeah.
This is a fly.
It's going to take a lot less time. Yeah.
So, do you want me to operate this? Yeah, okay, let's start. So we're going to start off with Franklin Elementary. A couple of pretty pictures to show you that we actually did finish and the furniture in and everything's done. Each of these schools, we're going to follow the same formula, so I'll go in a little bit of detail on Franklin to see if there's any questions on how I put the information together, and then we can just summarize as we go. So on the next slide, we have basically what I've tried to do is outline where we started and where we're at. And we've settled along that a lot of the savings from this project was going to fund the final phase of Churchill. We've always been saying around 1.1 to 1.2 million. And this just helps prove that out, basically, because there's always a little, a couple of I's to dot and a couple of T's to cross here at the very, very final end. But these first four schools are essentially done. And so... What this shows is that the trade contracts did go up. There were some change orders that added dollars to those initial trade contracts, but there were savings from the savings in unlet contracts or contingency, or in a reduction in dollars that flowed through Fred McQuinn that ended up offsetting some of the changes that added money to the trade contracts. And then down below, what I've tried to do is identify, essentially were always three different categories of where that money came from in changes. Mm-hmm. The first change came from the mobiles. The total of $2,927,097 for Franklin actually started a little less than that. There was an intermediate bid package that added the work for the mobiles that resulted in that final dollar figure, which totals 13.7 for the original four schools that we always tracked. So there was, but the low bidders were actually already under contract on the site, so we just issued change orders to their contract rather than a separate contract for work they were already doing. So there was always additional money for mobiles that was part of the budget, just flowed into the contracts. And then as part of every bid, we also had various contracts that had unit pricing associated with them, whether they be for concrete or moisture mitigation, so that we always anticipated spending some value of money on unit prices, and so there was always in every bid package unit prices, and then there were some miscellaneous things that were unaccounted for, which is why we started out with a contingency.
Mm-hmm.
And in most cases, you'll see that the original value of the savings or unlet line and the contingency isn't far off. We didn't spend a lot of money in change orders as we went through the project, and we certainly were able to retain almost most of the contingency on every job and a fair amount of the unlets. And so for Franklin, the unspent money that stayed with the district to fund Churchill Phase 3 was $260,000. So, if you could just go back one, just to leave that here for a second.
Does that make sense? Are there any mm-hmm. questions on mm-hmm. what I'm trying to show here?
Makes sense, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
I guess for me, I'm always a little uncomfortable about savings in that I say that you guys did an outstanding job. You kept it at the cost level that you thought you were going to keep it at. I think most of these projects, you're building in some money into it to make sure that if something goes awry, that you've got some extra money. And for some reason, for me, we call it savings. For me, it just means that, you know, I'll give you credit. You kept it where it needed to be. But I get a little uncomfortable with savings because it makes it look like while the project was going on, there were all these cost savings measures that we didn't think about ahead of time. And I know you guys are smart guys, and you think about this stuff ahead of time. So I don't think that's the case. So that's why, for me, I'm always... Mm-hmm. And it happens when I was on the park board. It was the same kind of thing. And so I always caution the savings part of it because it all makes us look like gurus and that we saved all this money. Right. But really, it, to me, you guys did a great job of keeping it where it needed to be. And so you didn't have to go into some of those things that maybe you could have not anticipated that could occur.
You're exactly right. And this isn't intended to say, hey, you know, we save money that we inflate. You know, that's not the intent.
Right.
Some, like I said in one of the previous board meetings, there was... I can't remember the exact number, maybe the $300,000 or so that we put in escalation, mm-hmm. that was part of that 1.2, that we never needed to use. Right. Now, it was put in there because that's good planning, but because of schedule compression and other reasons, that money never got spent, mm-hmm. so it was saved, but it was never really needed,
right.
You know what I mean? So yeah. I get what you're saying.
I'm with you.
So that was it.
Language, yeah. Mm-hmm.
So, Forest Glen, the numbers there on Forest Glen, we... track through the same way. Here we had about $100,000 in trade contract ads, and some of that, you know, basically what happens is whatever was not spent in the savings or the unlet line, the contingency flowed up, and then a little bit offset on the money that flowed through Frederick Quinn. Similar group of changes. In this one, we had some unsuitable soils that were encountered before we had to do the addition, right?
Yeah. Was there? I remember it.
So there were some soil borings that demonstrated that there was the potential for that. It was a little unclear as to how far that was going to go. So that would be one of those things, kind of going back to Kurt's point. Mm-hmm. We probably had a bucket of money set aside for that, but we didn't know exactly how much we're going to need until we get into it. We go into it, that's what we spend. If it hasn't all been spent, it's savings. Mm-hmm. So Forest Glen, $311,000 in unspent funds. And then we move to the next one, which is Churchill, the first phase, which is a little bit unique. So if we go to the numbers slide, here there was a little over $120,000 in savings. And most of that was anticipated with the mobiles, moisture mitigation, some overtime, because that one was a schedule. That was one of the ones that we tried to compress a little bit, make sure we get the kids in school on time. But then we've got this phase 2.5 underneath miscellaneous. Mm-hmm. And if you'll remember, when we decided to go to phase 3, there were some things that were done that had to be undone, things that weren't done that had to be done. So there was a fair amount of money in the changes that were tied up into that phase 2.5. Some structural stuff, electrical, yeah, the feed that had to come around and get relocated. So fortunately, there was some money here. Now, the other thing that's very unique about this phase of Churchill is we always had a fair amount of money set aside in this budget for the eventuality that the job was going to incur the expenses of restoring the site and dealing with the mobiles once they were gone, mm-hmm. if they were all gone. And even early on in the project, we anticipated that there was the potential that all the mobiles would be gone. We didn't exactly know how or if phase 3 was actually going to happen. Mm-hmm. But we reserved money in this budget intentionally because we didn't want to fall short on the ability to execute the final phase of the Churchill project. So all along, we've been identifying Churchill had, again, around $300,000 in savings or money, unspent funds that were going to fund phase 3. But now we're at $640,000. Well, all of that money was then spent, that is being spent now, right, Dave? That's for all the parking lot and the restoration and some of the other things you're doing on site at Churchill. That money was always in the job, and then it was decided to do that outside of our contracts. So that money is there and is just being spent in a different way, basically, for parking lot replacement, yep. restoration. All of that work is coming this summer. Mm-hmm. Right? Okay. Anything else to add to that? Okay, so this number took a big jump up. I put this in a report to Becky last month in the April report. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you saw those numbers, but it took a pretty big jump up last month because there was that pot of money in here for that intended scope, mm-hmm. and now that money is being spent mm-hmm. outside of the project, basically, but it comes from the project. Mm-hmm. That makes sense.
Still doing what it was intended to do.
It is. Yeah. It just wasn't coming through our management
right.
process.
Mm-hmm.
Patrick?
Say that again because I got uncomfortable when you said that.
Okay. So
we had money, but we're moving it to somewhere else.
That moving it might not be the right way to say it because it's still in your funds.
Yeah.
It's not in our funds.
Yeah, yeah.
So that money's sitting in a fund somewhere, and it was going to flow down through our process.
This project.
Right. Now it's flowing outside of this process.
Outside of Jack's CM
FQC.
Work.
FQC.
So that's yeah. what you're going. That's why you're taking action on the. You've taken action on the bids, mm-hmm. and tonight you're going to take action on signing the contract for that bid
work.
Because we can't sign the contracts like Jack can.
It's still part of the same. It was intended to be spent at Churchill for what
yep.
is being intended. What
right.
is being spent on?
Right.
So that stayed the same. It's just the mechanism of how the money's being spent.
Mm-hmm. Because we're using a separate vendor.
Correct.
A different vendor, yeah. That's why I said it's still doing what it was meant to do.
It is.
But not through FQC over here.
Right.
Got it.
So that's why that number went up. So now the number is total $1.6 million in savings, or unspent funds, I think. 1.5, somewhere in that range.
Right.
That's where it went up.
1.42.
Okay, thanks. Mm-hmm. Lincoln? This was a long time ago now.
Yep.
It's been done for a while. And again, some modest changes, many of which we were anticipating with moisture mitigation and some overtime to finish that job up. There were some HVAC modifications that we needed in that project due to some of the unique things that went on at Lincoln. So again, about $300,000 in savings. And then I think, what's next? Yeah, phase three.
Yeah.
So phase three is just about done. We'll talk about that in a second. In the unlet line, we've got $100,000 with an asterisk. We're still finishing the work. There's roughly $130,000 in that category right now. We think about $100,000 is not going to be spent out of that category.
Mm-hmm.
So this $200,000 has not been reported to the board previously because we weren't deep enough in the Churchill. We didn't know what we were going to encounter on the site. We have allowance money in the trade contracts to deal with the soil and the site restoration. We weren't sure if that was going to be enough, depending on what the final decisions were on the road. We didn't know if we were going to build the road. We didn't know if we were going to come in from the northwest corner. So when this was put together, there was money available to do a variety of different things. And so the road's coming out. The site's being restored. The black's going in. It's going to be seeded. All of that work should be able to be handled within the trade contract allowances that we have. So we haven't spent most of the contingency, and we haven't spent most of the allowance money that was identified for various options. So there's about another $200,000 that's going to be in the project funds that's going to be unspent. Okay. So where are we at?
Actually, the excavator finished today. These machines will be going out as soon as they get the permits to haul them. The landscapers come back tomorrow to touch up everything that they can that's ready for them right now. My wild card right now is a concrete guy with the rain and the forecasted rain, and trying to get him
mm-hmm.
scheduled for that last 100 feet of sidewalk is killing me. But once that gets done, then we'll come back. We'll get the black and the grass alongside the building in between the sidewalks. So that's basically what's left.
Just that little the east side of the gym and maybe that northeast corner mm-hmm. where the road was. So that area in there has the sidewalk. black, and seed, and then we're done.
Yeah. Nice.
All the, other than Churchill Phase 3, all the closeout documents, all the O&M manuals, all the warranties, all that stuff has been delivered. We'll do the same thing on Phase 3, or starting that with the office in terms of assembling it to it. Yeah, so, because every contractor that is under contract to you has maintenance information, operations and maintenance manuals, warranty documentation that we all assemble into a final set of documents and deliver to the district. So that's kind of the final piece. And until all that's done and we have the warranties and have the right dates and all that stuff, we always hold little bits of money throughout all these contracts. And so that'll go on for a couple, 3 months before, while we close out the financials. But the manuals will probably be done here sometime in the meeting.
So does that those final documents and all that, does that have to go to the village and they do a check mark, and then we also have to go to like fire and police and say this is the new footprint and these are the rooms and all that other stuff?
The fire and police part has already been done. You know, okay. They've been invited to witness hydro tests, and they've invited they've seen sprinkler drawings. So that process is already.
So they know where the new rooms are and something happened.
And that's we send the fire department all the new drawings. Okay. So they have it already. Okay. And that's, you know, when they come out and do the fire drills, you know, oh, look at the new room.
Oh, okay.
So what the regional office of education has already given final approval to all of the buildings. So they're your certificate of occupancy versus maybe the city. So that's all done. Really, the last inspection hurdle we'll have to pass will be your design civil engineer to make sure that the seed and grass grows and you get all the erosion control and stabilization done in that. And that will be really the last inspection, right? It's not really a municipal inspection. It's an inspection by the design engineers.
Didn't we have a swampland issue?
In the back of Churchill?
Yeah.
Yeah, it was that back corner when we were originally thinking about
a
road.
That's been done.
And we were like, yeah, we're going to leave it as a designated.
We never went into it.
We never went into it because it was a wetland. Yeah, we chose never to go. There were just too many other problems that came up with it. Once they designated a wetland area, we're like, no.
This is going to be the new playground area.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Dave can speak better to this.
Yeah, that's ready for a year.
Yeah, ready for day.
They started installing the old equipment this week, so they got that structure up, and that's moving along pretty nicely. So.
Good. That's great.
So just kind of more from my point, but I want to make sure that I summarize the financials. So we anticipate, in the original 13.7, we anticipated, once we were deep enough in that project, to fund about $1.2 million in unspent funds for Churchill Phase 3. That happened. On top of that, in Churchill, we had reserved about $300,000 in funds that is now being spent in a different contracting mechanism for the intended purpose.
Mm-hmm.
So while I show it as savings or unspent money, it's really being spent just outside of this process. It's being spent in a different way. And then in the final phase of Churchill, there's an additional $100,000 out of the original 2.56 that ended up not being needed to be spent. So that's kind of where we're at.
Good summary.
Yeah.
Board members?
I so concur with Kurt. I mean, anybody that knows anything about project management, this is it's science, art, and forecasting, and a little bit of magic. So we've said this to Jack before, but thank you for coming, Adam, tonight to be a part of this as well, and the work that you did to keep this ever moving and adjust as you've been needing to do. So we thank you for that as well.
Yeah.
I would just say, to the team, FQC has been an amazing team. It's a partner. And that was really proven out today. Dave came in today. He's like, seeing me struggle out, sitting in my office all day on a beautiful day. He's like, let's go see Churchill. Let's show you the road. It's almost gone. I was like, I'm out. Let's go. But you know what the cool thing was? We're about, would you say, 95-98% complete? Right, somewhere in that range?
Yeah.
Somewhere right around in that area. You guys have a big high school that you're starting. And I know Adam is going to be taking that on. I think many companies would have said, Adam, you're done here. Please head on over to this that's our new project that's right there. It's not what you guys did.
I don't know if you have better guys than Adam. I would be shocked, but this guy has been.
Adam assures us they don't. Yeah.
But it just goes to
high school.
Yeah. It just goes back to,
we'll get up to
working with FQC and the commitment you made to us that you were going to stay with us the entire time. I mean, again, we're just about ready to be done. You guys have a brand new high school that you're starting, and I know Adam's supposed to be the lead on that as well.
Yep.
It would have been easy. And I think everybody would have understood if you would have said, hey, you mind? But you guys didn't even come to us and ask it. It just shows you all of your quality that you bring to this entire project. I just want to personally say thank you to each of you. You've helped me.
Thank you.
Personally, so thank you.
Yeah, I'd have the same thing, Jack, with your team. I know these guys got a bunch of people behind the scenes. And, you know, Dean and I have been on the board and since this thing started. You know, wherever opinions go with what's been done and how it's gone, that's, you know, the politics, you guys are in concrete and dirt. But I know we asked a lot of questions. There was a lot of projects. You guys couldn't be any more professional about this. You know, as a board, you know, I know we don't do these things, but personally, as a professional, if there's a letter of recommendation that you ever need from another site, I'm more than happy to put my name to that. So thank you very much.
Thank you. Yeah, really appreciate it.
I would echo what he said. And we did meet you. We met you in
about 2.5 years ago.
Yeah, it was 2.5 years ago and when you guys came in. And I was on the committee to vet through that. And I will tell you, coming in the door, you guys were not the lead. You know, we had a lot of shiny brochures and a lot of big presentations that were given to us. And while we didn't, as a group, say, hey, here's 1, 2, and 3, individually we were kind of putting that in our head with it. And it wasn't until we met you guys and what we thought you portrayed to us that we said, wait, just a minute, we need to go back and look at all this again. And I do remember all of you coming in. Mm-hmm. Jack, you know, you've been here ever since. You're like a member of the board almost at this point. But I would echo everything Patrick said. And as a politician, if you will, because that's what you have to do on a school board, you take a big chance when you do this. And when you say, yep, that's the one I'm voting for, I sure do appreciate that you did the job you did. And early on, you guys talked about minimizing the impact to the community. And I'm not sure, but I don't think a single thing bubbled up to us about community complaints.
The tar smell.
The tar smell?
Yeah, that would be good.
But it's cool, though, because the next day they shut down.
And change the chemical and make up the tar.
You can change that
you
know, after that.
But talk about a well-run project, and I just want to tell you how much I appreciate what you did. You guys are
thank you, Jack.
Thank you. Yeah, thanks. Thank and you. Make sure principals, staff, administration, board, really, Dave, you guys were partners as well. So
don't forget the Ben Franklin swimming pool.
Yeah.
We didn't know that was in there.
It's
and all
not
of a sudden we
had more
them.
Challenges.
No.
We all worked together and got through them.
Unbelievable. In a weekend, everybody did that. And Dave, you know, you really stepped up there too. So this whole project has just been very, very good to work with.
Thank you.
Nice. Well done. Oh, we're clapping.
Yeah, we're clapping.
Stephanie wants a campfire.
And I was going to say, I always appreciated Jack coming to the I can tell he loves coming to the board.
Oh,
yeah. Especially when they run really late and always puts a smile on his face. It always looks good to you, Jack.
That's a great point.
No matter how late it was, when we got to him.
Willing to be here.
Always willing.
Yes. Jack?
Yeah.
Thanks, Jack.
My question. Question really quick, but this isn't related to that. They want.
Hold on a second,
because Drew might, and
okay,
then
Drew,
I just wanted to thank you.
Thank you. You're welcome.
We're not the easiest board to work with. We ask a lot of questions, and we have a very analytical board, and I'm sure we drove you nuts. But
remain silent.
Doing your job. I'm just glad Joe's not here too.
That is the best.
Thank you.
You did
an outstanding job.
Yeah. Actually, Joe is here, but he is detained downstairs.
Yeah.
Thank you very much. Right. Yeah. Right. Have a good night, everybody.
About the furniture and the pictures. I know that. And so I know they had
the furniture and the pictures.
No, I noticed that it's different in some of the rooms. I'm like, did we change our kind of furniture?
One was a bar stool.
Like, there were bars. Like,
I'm not quite sure.
Well, not, they're not bars.
Table, high tops.
I can clarify that they're not bar stools.
Yeah. Science classrooms.
Yeah.
Some classrooms have desks, some have tables. The teachers have kind of, they do garage sailing at the end of the year, so some may need extra tables, some might need desks, so they kind of mix match stuff around. Different so that was all part of the 21st century furniture. The lime green chairs, those are the tall ones.
Well, those, like, I see a room here at Churchill, it has no lime green chairs, it's just like bar stool, like
tabletops.
They're stools.
Bar stools,
yeah.
With tables.
Yeah.
I just noticed they were different.
Yeah, there are some that have the tabletops.
Those were all for the art room, and I don't think she needed all of them, so some of them they had the little hokey rocking chairs for the reading around the table.
Mm-hmm.
So they kind of
mix and match what they want. Yep. These are great pictures, too.
Yeah. And I just want to clarify, Patrick's letter of recommendation or Dean is on their own. Right?
Not as the board.
He's saying, personally, I would.
Personally,
yes.
I would.
Thank you, Patrick. Thanks for clarification. Okay, board policy revision, the student-athlete concussion and head injury.
Yeah, this is the only policy in front of you tonight due to the fact that we need to pull together. Part of this policy requires a protocol team, a concussion protocol team, and we need to get it into the Hadley handbook. So that's why it's sitting out here separately that the policy committee moved it forward. There's a couple pieces in this that is different than the press, and probably the biggest one is this consideration on the concussion. In presses, it was about having a student sustaining a concussion within the school and its interscholastic athletics or throughout the school day. This also broadens that to a concussion that happens outside of the D41 schools, which is really important, and that the parents are to notify. So that's one of the significant differences between what we're adopting is work from Franzic, where the press had that left out. We really felt like that was critical to us. Highlight a couple other pieces.
And that's critical because of the fact that our kids are active in so many sports and activities outside of this. But we need to know that if they're going to be active here. So if we have a kid playing hockey who gets a concussion and they don't tell us, then that puts us in a bad situation.
No, I'm glad that you did that.
Yeah, so if the board approves this on June 13th, we would bring together that that concussion oversight team to begin their work and then applying this into the Hadley handbook.
I'm sorry, Paul. So basically what happens if somebody gets a concussion off of school grounds, not part of a district event?
They're to notify us.
And if they don't?
I mean, it's everyone's responsibility, as well as the students, to notify us because it's just that serious of an injury.
Yeah, I appreciate it. I know that, but if they don't, something happens at the school, by putting the language in here, does it not add us to the liability list that says, well, you should have asked me if I had a concussion kind of question?
So this will go out to all parents. The parents will be notified when they sign up that you will have a concussion protocol piece that you're signing up that you have to notify us. Remember, this went through Franzic.
Yeah, yeah.
This is our legal team's rendition of press. This is not press's rendition. They believe this was even more important to have in there because of the number of concussions, as Dean and Stephanie agreed that there are concussions occurring all over the place, and when we're not taking the necessary protocol, kids are in danger.
Right, but when parents get there, is there a sign-off that I have read this and understand it and understand my responsibility? So is there an exhibit that goes with this?
There will be, but that's
second stage. Okay. Because that was, I think that's what I heard you say.
And the important part of them notifying us, it's more so we can follow the protocol for if a student does have an injury, what has to be done before they can return to a sport. Obviously, within the district, we can't control what they do outside of that. But that's why we need to be notified.
Right. But this also has educational implications, so that if a student has to be in, can't have stimulation or that type of thing. I mean, all those pieces are built in, which is why the sign-off is important. I mean, it mirrors what is at the high school level, too.
Oh, it does?
Their concussion protocol, yeah. So this is for June 13th. I just want to note on the recommendation, it says June 9th. Mm-hmm. So I just want to
Did I make up a date?
I'm not going to look at my calendar on my phone.
That would not be unusual for me to make up a date.
13th. So 13th, yeah. Just FYI. So,
yeah, no, I was saying that Frantic did West and ours as well.
Yes. No, that's a good point.
Yep.
I wanted to make sure we said that.
So we'll move this on to the June 13th board meeting.
Okay, thank you. Community survey.
So the next piece up for the board is to continue giving administration feedback on what do we want within that survey outside of the satisfaction aspect as it pertains to modifications to our elementary buildings and the Hadley, the removal of portables at Hadley, and any additional work that needs to be done there. So this would be an important time for us, for the board, to come together on what that looks like so we can hand that off to Green Associates if there is additional work to be done or not. If not, then we just move forward with the task force recommendation. Because that's currently what Green and Associates have. They have the task force recommendations, elementary and Hadley. So tonight is about the board giving administration further direction on are there any other pieces that they want included in that survey. Or, again, let me back up, going to Green and Associates for cost and then coming back to the board and then finally bringing it to the survey. So anyone want to start us off?
Well, I think you're saying, though, that we're already covering community facilities task force.
That one we've already included.
So that would have been my only comment is I want to make sure that gets in there because
that's
we asked the community to do this. They spent a lot of time on it, and to not ask about it would be very disingenuous. So I think it needs to be in there, and as long as that's in there, I'm fine, but other people may have other stuff.
So just a note on that. We even highlight that this is a community task force recommendation.
Yes.
So it's different than if there's anything else that we add to it. Mm-hmm. So thank you for clarifying that.
Mm-hmm. Well, one of the so I want to thank Kirk because he came to president meeting last Thursday so we could talk about kind of the direction of this as an agenda item. And understanding that there's kind of two pieces to it. One is the facilities task force discussion and the report that came of recommendations to the board. And the other piece was, as we're taking the pulse of the community, the intention behind the kind of questions around that. And so I'm on board with exactly what Dean is saying in terms of the task force work being front and center and also being articulated that this was a community task force as well, because that was the charge to it. The other piece of this for me is when I think, if I'm thinking about this just on the community survey, which is what we're talking about, I went back and forth on this, and I'm going to say what I said when we had our meeting last Thursday, and that is the board will have response to what Green and Associates brings back, mm-hmm. because they're number one, they're a brand new architect, which was intentional to have some bring in somebody new eyes. So now they're getting for the first time this information. They will inevitably have probably collateral. Ideas as a result of looking at what they have in front of them, and so I'm looking forward to that. But when we talk about the survey, my concern or interest in this is to make sure that what's put out to the public is truly that pulse. And so I would put on the table for thought is if there's too many requests for what do you think, what do you think, what do you think, that it'll be confusing. That's my only concern. So if we add, as a board, Part A, Part B, Part C to the recommendations that are there, then it could get muddied, and I'm not sure we'll get the pulse check that we, at least I'll speak for myself, the pulse check that I'm looking for, which is response to the recommendations of this convened community task force. So having said that, the other piece of this, and this harkens back to something that Kurt and Stephanie have brought up in the past as a kind of a pinpoint, and that is the board stating its support for full-day kindergarten. And this is an opportunity to put that specifically out there as a community survey pulse check in terms of what people are thinking about that. So that, to me, is a really important piece of feedback that I want to make sure is not muddied by option A, option B, option C. We put it out, it comes back, the board and the administration looks at what that survey says, and then and then those next steps for me start to get clarified a little bit depending on what they say. So for me, that's those are those two pieces. Yep.
Other board members?
I was in that same meeting, so I just talked to some of that.
Mm-hmm.
And Eric and I disagreed on a little bit about this, but I do agree that we probably should put a $36 million option out there. But I also told her, I'm not sure you need a survey to figure that out. I'm pretty sure I know what the committee's going to come back and say if you ask me for $36 million. So for me, in that line of thinking, if you put the survey out with a $36 million request, the community survey comes back negatively, which I believe it will, then you're now how much further down the road? So
can I just ask a clarifying question, though? And I should have asked this Thursday, and we just went on to another thing. Just to understand what you're saying, when you say put a $36 million option out there, are you saying those pieces that create, that make up the potential for X number of millions of dollars, so it's the Hadley piece, it's the elementary piece, but put those out individually?
Well, I think you put out the task force recommendation,
yeah,
right? And it's $36 million, which, as I said the other day, within the task force, you had, it was a nice sampling size, but within that task force, you had a fairly almost even split between whether people wanted to go ahead with all this or not. So within that group, you didn't really have consensus to move forward with the $36 million option anyways. I think what they did agree on is eliminating Spalding as an option for anything. So
but they used their weighting matrix is what I hear you saying is that they used a weighting matrix with that in order to clarify this is where we're going to end up.
Well, and I asked Tom that question. I think his weighting matrix was wrong. You know, so I mean, I think it was too light. So for me, I'm just using gutty instinct here from the kid that grew up in this town. But so for me, I mean, as I told Erica, go ahead and put it out there. I mean, you could put the $36 million option out there. The survey is going to come back and tell you what I think it's going to say, and then we're back to square one. So, I've thought about this since then. I almost think because the timeline kind of crept up on us, in terms of, they kind of had to finish quickly to get it done, and they were even rushing to get the report to us that weekend. So, for me, I'm almost to the point of saying we should probably set aside, and I know people aren't going to like this, but I want to make sure that we get this right. We only have one chance to send out the survey, so even if it delays the survey, I'm actually okay with that, because to rush and try and get this put together in the survey and figure out what we're doing, I just think we're going to make a mistake. So given some extra time, I actually think we should probably have a special meeting just devoted to trying to straighten out what do we decide to do going forward. Do we put just one option on there? Do we come up with a couple different options? So that's kind of where I'm at with that.
So your recommendation is convene a special meeting, come together, and have the board really hash this out for an hour or two.
And
is that what I'm hearing?
Dean's point a lot where you're fresh, it's all you're talking mm-hmm. about, we're not at 9 o'clock trying to figure this out.
Mm-hmm.
It delays it a little bit. And I also, just so I don't forget this, and this is just how my mind scrambles, but when I was reading some stuff, did we give anything to Green Associates to look at Spalding? Was there something in the report that said
to look at Spalding?
Yeah, that they were looking at Spalding.
Yeah, their report says they're putting concept diagrams.
So I was wondering why they were doing that, or was that part of the cost that they had? So we could.
I'll go back and look at it, but I thought the recommendation was just for Hadley and the modifications. But I'll go back and look at it. Because that ultimately.
I'm really confused because I knew that's one thing for sure. I think the task force.
Yeah. Was it on this?
Yeah.
So
this
letter?
Ultimately,
I would agree.
Ultimately,
third paragraph.
It comes back to the board. So that's a piece that is obviously going to change quite a bit based off of the board conversation. So
yeah, that's old information.
Yeah. So
I think it got pulled forward from the original.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And again, I'm with
no, yeah, no.
that on the survey, the the task force recommendation should be there, but I think, you know, as I said, within that faction of people, there's a lot of disagreement even within that part of it. So
okay. Stephanie or Patrick? Drew. Sorry.
Drew had a question over here.
You okay?
Yeah.
Okay. I have a clarifying question. This survey, I know that you and Stephanie spent a lot of time with the last survey, and I don't know if this is this the same survey or there.
No, this is the community one.
Okay, this is school perceptions for the community.
This is the community one. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So there's the
so we have a satisfaction part, like Dr. Gordon said, to the community, and then we're adding this piece to it. And I guess what I'm saying is that piece needs to be there. But I have, you know, I have some thoughts that as I think that the recommendation should be there, but I think we should also maybe look at, are there some other options just to get a feel for where people might be in terms of what they're thinking, you know, if we were to go ask them.
So there's not a lot of your work for the other survey really doesn't.
No,
that's completely
not
separate.
Together at all.
It's the same company that's doing it, though, school perception.
That's the only connection.
Okay,
that's the only connection.
Okay.
Yep.
Gotcha.
Steph?
Me? Okay.
Yep, you.
I'm going to try to collect my thoughts because there's a lot in my head here. I think the way I'm looking at it is the same as Kurt. I mean, we have this quote from Green and Associates for what they want to come up with drawings, which shocked me. It's a lot of money. And so, you know, we're about to spend $28,000 getting concept drawings from them. I want to make sure that we're, like Kurt said, that we're doing it right. And I think the way that I look at it is the task force put us in a direction. They gave us the list of, you know, this is what we'd like to have. And I did notice on the Green and Associates letter, they have a list of priorities. I was curious where that came from because it's not in the task force report. So I didn't know if we just pulled that together to give to them because, you know, one concern I have on here is priority one for the elementary schools, they have two kindergarten rooms. Mm-hmm. But is that really all the classroom space we have to? I mean, have we made sure that all we need to add at each school is two kindergarten rooms? Do we need to add more space? I don't know. And I didn't see that. Like, I didn't see the task force report that detailed as far as exactly what rooms need to add, but maybe that's...
Yeah, we sat with them with the task force. We also gave them the task force recommendation. But those are those pieces that we can all sit and have that conversation.
Right. So that's why I think we should have some discussion because, you know, nobody... I don't want to have them just draw up drawings for what they think. I mean, well, if you look at it, the task force really was working off of, in my mind, the FGM concepts for what
absolutely
they wanted to look like. Yep. I mean, they didn't even have the advantage of having, I mean, it's unfortunate that they didn't have that utilization study because in looking at it, their ideas actually address the same issues.
Wait, the Hadley update, you mean?
The Hadley update done by Brain Spaces.
Mm-hmm. Right. Mm-hmm.
Their ideas address the same issues that the task force identified. However, their solutions were completely different from what FGM proposed, which actually, I'm not an architect or... But in my mind, some of their solutions, I think, would be a lot less expensive as well. Mm-hmm. So I think that might, you know, play into what we decide to do moving forward. But
they're going to develop their own concept drawings because I want to clarify that point that you made because it's important. And so it's that whatever the former architect did, that's done. But what we're asking Green and Associates to do is to start from square one with at least a base understanding of what the recommendations, you know, came out.
But I was just saying that's what the task force was working off of, what FGM had. So
they didn't have the luxury of seeing Green.
They didn't have access to Green. Mm-hmm. I just want to make sure we're giving them, I mean, this list of priorities, we've never seen. I mean, we have the task force come twice. I've never seen this list of priorities. As a board, I think, we should be reviewing these to just make sure is there anything that we're missing? Because ultimately, and maybe Green is going to come back with, they'll be like, this is if we do absolutely everything. Mm-hmm. This is if we do the bare minimum that has to be done.
Right.
Like you could say we have to get rid of portables.
Mm-hmm.
This is if we, I don't know, but I think we need to come up with some different options. And as a board, I don't think it's fair to all the work that the task force did or the community to just say, we're just going to give what the task force came up with to Green. They'll come up with the plan. We'll just, that plan, I think we have to have different options. And it warrants, in my mind, another discussion as a board
to just make sure, have we identified everything that we want to identify for Green to address? You know,
whatever
one thought,
it is.
I mean, I know I always like to talk about this, but have we looked at our preschool programs that keeps growing? Have we looked at, would it make more sense to pull those out of a Forest Glen to free up space at Forest Glen? Maybe then you wouldn't have to do construction on Forest Glen. But what is the cost differential? I mean, there's some things I think we need to be exploring that would maybe have a cost impact on if the end game is to create space at the schools, the elementary schools, to house full-day kindergarten, is there mm-hmm. other little
and I know that the task force talked about that too, the Forest Glen piece. And
but they eliminated that because just doing that didn't get kindergarten at all the schools. It only got it
right.
at Forest
Glen. But knowing that the neighborhood school concern was top of the mind for them.
For preschool?
But
schools
ultimately, what you're saying is the board needs more time with Green Associates in the room
to vet this list.
To go through this list, make sure that we get everything we want, plus maybe an additional option if the board so chooses. Is that what I'm hearing?
There's an additional option. I think
from the board's perspective,
solution or what we're working towards, but there may be different ways to get to.
Okay.
I don't know if that makes sense.
It does.
Like, I'm not saying, oh, now we're going
to
build a school and different. I'm not suggesting that.
Are you suggesting that we meet with Green? I mean, I feel like if we just have our own conversation, it doesn't make any sense. If we're saying that this is predicated on some of what they're doing, then they should be in the room.
Yeah, and they should be hearing what our thought process is that way.
Right.
You know, I'd agree with that. You know, because FGM to me, FGM is gone for a reason. But when the task force started, that's kind of what we had for them. So,
well, and I won't go there.
Dean,
go ahead.
Can I ask a clarifying question?
Mm-hmm.
I'm fine with doing all of that and having more discussions on it. What I'm wondering, though, is that the task force has come back to us with a recommendation. Are we going to, is there anybody on the board who doesn't feel like we should be getting the cost of that recommendation the way the task force has?
No, I think we owe it to the recommendation, and I want to see that.
Well, okay,
I want to
good,
see what
good,
does. That's where I'm starting.
I want to make sure we're not sending any kind of... But
no,
there may be other things that we want to get something out.
Right.
But I want to be clear, because there's a lot of people who work in the task force, that we will get a recommendation from Green for what that task force says.
Yeah, they have to
that's what
pricing,
I'm hearing.
Right?
Yeah.
I said that in the meeting the other day. We have to make sure we get the pricing right. But we also need to make sure that the priorities are either correct or not, and you know, make sure that they're on the same page with us on the
priorities. Just as an example, I mean, for them to come up with a concept drawing from Green is, you know, we're talking $28,000. What if they come back with the task force recommendation and they say, this is going to be $60 million? I mean, what are we going to do? I mean, we have no idea. We have no idea what they're going to come back with, and I think we need to make sure going in with them and say, look, this is what... These are the things that have to be done. This is how the task force has prioritized it.
Right.
And are there other solutions we can come up with? Because is that going to be feasible? I mean, I just... If we're
isn't that their job,
money,
though, too? Is
I
that
make sure.
is to make sure that they have... I mean, looking at this cursory as I did, and then I kind of went through with the report and checked off, these are those key elements. There's one on here, I think, that got lifted again from former that wasn't out of the recommendation. But to me... Part of the architect's responsibility is to also be thinking broadly about this is what you want to do, but it's our job to be creative with that and to say here's some collateral, you know, other options, right? I would expect that they would do that.
So we're agreeing, though, we should do this in another meeting.
Yeah,
today.
I think that
I just want to clarify that.
Dean's point is not the
So we don't want to do this now, but I think we're all in agreement. That
Patrick?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
There.
All right.
There you go.
So,
Drew?
Direction...
Wait. I got to back up.
Okay.
So what we're looking to do is to have a special meeting to talk about the options from the task force when we meet with Green.
Absolutely. We want to give Green a very specific list of what that looks like. From, again, the task force has theirs. And then are there additional pieces that we want Green to look at? So we do it once. Green goes back. They have a clear charge from the board, administration, as to what they're to do and to bring back to us.
And this is Green Associates, not Green Spaces.
Green Associates, the architects. Okay. Yeah. Yeah, Brain Spaces.
Brain Spaces.
Not Green Spaces.
And then I think another thing we have to address.
Oh, okay. That's
and I don't know when we're going to do this. Maybe we do it with the budget, but and somebody mentioned it. I can't remember who mentioned it down there. But we do have to, I think, start talking about if we're going to move down this route of looking to add onto the elementary schools for full-day kindergarten, how do you plan to fund it? Because that's the other half of it. And I know I've just, I'm just speaking for myself, I'm not speaking for everyone else. I've said, I don't want to go to an ed referendum to fund full-day kindergarten. I don't know where the rest of the board, you know, Kurt stands on that, but I don't know where the rest of the board stands. But I think we need to start having that discussion, too, and maybe that's more appropriate when we talk about the budget. But that's going to play into, I think, what we do and also maybe what we put on the survey. I mean, for example, Kurt and I brought up PBL coaches earlier, and that really has nothing to do with, just personally for me, I'm not saying, oh, we shouldn't do PBLs. Mm-hmm. I've said, let's do one good PBL in the district. I see value in doing that, but I am going to question, you know, if we had envisioned a larger vision for PBLs and we're not getting there, does it make sense to have those resources allocated to that position, or do you want to allocate those resources to something else like full-day kindergarten?
So we would have to have that. Yeah, right. No, we would have to have that conversation.
Right, but I think discussing personnel is a part of that budget planning process, and that's the work that Lori's been doing, and just in terms of setting us up for staffing. I hear you have a message about that. I hear it.
I just wanted to clarify that.
I hear it.
Because there was a lot of parents.
But when we get this back, you know, from Green, I mean, to Kurt's point, it could be huge, it could be not so huge. They might be really creative about this. Maybe they have, you know, it's a whole set of what ifs. So having the conversation, giving them clarity, moving that forward will then move us to that next conversation, which is, now what do we do?
Well,
and how do you fund it?
I guess for me, at some point we do have to have the full-day kindergarten conversation, because how do you task them with taking a look at our buildings? And Paul says to him, well, I'm not really sure where the board's at with that. I mean, I know where I'm at with it, but I'm not sure that I have the funding for it or whatever. And then they give us drawings that show that it's there, but then we don't. The board doesn't say we're going to provide the funding for it, or the board decides to outvote Stephanie and I and go to an ed referendum and it fails. You know, so there's a lot of things that.
Or passes.
Yeah, there's always that possibility.
You make a lot of assumptions.
But the tax increases. Yeah. You know, again, as a kid that grew up here, Dean, I can tell you it's not going to pass. So
one of the things I think is critical is to get the survey out, because that will inform the board more than almost anything else, because everybody's still guessing what the community does.
Yeah.
Some people believe this, some people believe that.
Let's ask them.
I think we've got to bring the board together at a special meeting, talk facilities, and then get the survey moving forward. Have Green Associates at our special meeting. Have our team at the special meeting. We make those decisions. We give clear direction to Green Associates. They move forward. They bring back to us. We get the survey set, and we launch the survey. From there, the survey is going to tell us what the community is feeling about all of these different topics, and that way we're not hypothesizing who believes what and what will pass and what won't pass.
Can we just to put a pin in this one and move on?
Yeah.
Can we just put, if we need to have that discussion, tell us if we need to create a timeline of community survey on top of Green Associates plans, on top of survey results on top of final discussion.
I'll lay out the.
We'll do that.
I'll do that in the coming days. So we lay all of that out for
awesome.
You. Guys. Yep. Oh, now we got one more over here. You're good.
Just a quick question. We're going to put all these together, but it sounds like we also have to dovetail to the community survey. We're talking about having a discussion about full-day kindergarten and funding, and that's part of this piece, which ties into the budgeting piece. So I mean that's going to be a lot of discussion.
I think yes, it is. It absolutely is. And remember, we're not going to be building anything in the very near future. It would still take up to, you know, 18 months, if, you know, with a referendum and board passing, we still probably have 3 years of a lot of heavy lifting to do before that time, between conversations and the time that we're ready to put shovels into the ground and all that other work. Putting shovels into the ground, I think, would be close to 18 months. If we did everything tonight, it would still be 18 months away before we could add any space. Just to give it kind of some context of a timeline.
Are we ready to talk about the budget piece? Do we have all the pieces?
The survey will help you. I think the survey will give you information that will help move the conversation forward.
You're going to give us a timeline.
Lay it all out, Patrick's request.
I feel like we're trying to get all this information done at the same time, and I don't know if there's a sequence that we should be following.
We'll have it for you. We'll have it for you.
And the last piece is there's momentum with the task force, which I'm very aware of, and we don't want to lose the momentum of all that work. You know that's important to continue to draw from. So.
The next one is increase in rate of pay for our substitute teachers. On your board report, breaking it down, currently our subs are $95 for the first 20 days, $100 after the 21 consecutive days. We're recommending a $10 increase on both to go to $105 for the first 20 and then $110 from that 21st on. Really believe that this has not been an increase in a number of years, 10 years. So we definitely believe that it's needed and to be within the range of our other local school districts. So I feel like this is an important piece for us to continue getting great substitute teachers. Lori, add? We're good? All right, board members?
I have a quick question. I know under additional costs, and you've talked about this before, there's substitute teachers are paid for only their actual worked days. If you have a long-term sub that's taking over, what's the difference?
We do request oftentimes that our long-term subs will attend institute days or STIP days or potentially stay with us to close the school year, work with our principals on that, and we do pay them for those days.
Yeah.
Typically, substitutes are not brought in for institute days if a teacher is absent.
Right.
That's the exception.
But that's a different kind of
need. Long-term sub is very different.
Correct. And you're not proposing an increase for the long-term sub.
The long-term ones that go beyond, that go to 30 to 90 days, we are not proposing an increase for the 20. The 21 days are cumulative, so it doesn't necessarily have to be sequential.
Oh. No, but I'm talking about the long, the 125 is staying.
Correct.
Okay.
And we looked at the comps; we were still pretty
confident. Yeah. Okay.
I was just curious what the overall annual increase is estimated. Do we know that?
And the difference was about approximately $37,000 if we use FY15 numbers and approximately $30,000 if we use FY15 numbers. Okay. So we can only afford.
Way to go, finance team.
No,
the committee did it. It was a good board, any other questions on this? So this will come to you June 13th
for
your action. Yep.
Okay. Consent agenda. Any items that board members would like to be removed from the consent agenda to be considered separately? Hearing none, may I have a motion to approve the consent agenda, which includes item 1, finance, facilities, and operations, the treasurer's report, item B, the investment schedule, C, monthly revenue expenditure summary report, D, summary of bills and payroll, E, vandalism report, F, disposal of surplus property, G, the 2015-2016 FOIA report, H, school district payment order from May 5th, 2016 to May 17th, 2016, item 2, other matters, A, approval of board meeting minutes, which includes May 4th, 2016, regular meeting, May 4th, 2016, closed session, May 9th, 2016, regular meeting, May 9th, 2016, closed session, May 16th, 2016, regular meeting, and May 16th, 2016, closed session. May I have a motion?
Motion.
Second.
Okay. Roll call.
Mr. Buckles?
Yes.
Mr. Elder?
Yes.
Mrs. Clark?
Yes.
Mr. Ellis?
Yes.
Mr. Escalante?
Yes.
Mr. Nelson?
Yes. Thank you. Superintendent recommendations. This is the 2016 summer capital project. We have these on our board reports. Approval of contract with HAP Builders Incorporated. May I have a motion to approve the administration's recommendation to grant permission for Assistant Superintendent Cheryl Whittem to enter into a contract on behalf of the district with HAP Builders Incorporated for the Churchill concrete walks, parking lot paving, portable dismantling, and Benjamin Franklin ADA bathroom renovation projects in the amount of $533,900. The project was approved at the April 11, 2016 Board of Education meeting as presented.
Motion.
Second.
Okay. Discussion.
This fits right into what Jack was speaking about earlier tonight, where it was originally under their approval process and their contracting. But when we made the decision to move it out of their work and into ours for some cost savings reasons, we now need to ensure that Cheryl can sign off on those contracts because they were originally intended for Jack to sign off and his team to sign off for it. And legally that is okay for them. But for us now, we need your approval to have Cheryl's signature on that. And just a note going forward, anytime there will be signatures needed by Cheryl or myself, that will be on the approval of that action item for that evening. So that's what this is. For both, for the first and the second one, they're very similar.
So you're the signatory on the contract.
Yep.
Okay.
Yeah.
This is just signatory. This isn't...
You've already approved...
This isn't the spinning of one... We're out of July.
No, no. This is all... You've approved these projects.
Right.
This is now handing it back over to Cheryl to put her... Her Cheryl... With them on it, nothing.
Okay. All right, roll call, please.
Mrs. Clark?
Yes.
Mr. Elder?
Yes.
Mr. Ellis?
Yes.
Mr. Escalante?
Yes.
Mr. Buckle?
Yes.
Mrs. Nelson?
Yes. Item 2, 2016 Summer Capital Project, again, approval of contract with Terracon Construction Code Service. We have a motion to approve the administration's recommendation to grant permission for Director of Buildings and Grounds, Dave Scarmato, to enter on behalf of the district into a supplement to the August 22nd, 2013 contract. Is that correct, 2013? Contract, original? I just want to say the original.
It's the amendment to the original.
Okay.
Yeah.
Original contract with Terracon Consultants Incorporated for various testing services related to the 2016 Summer Capital Project, which was approved at the April 11th, 2016 Board of Education meeting as presented. May I have a motion?
Motion.
Second.
Okay. Discussion?
Similar as the last. He's now the approver.
She has the appropriate licenses and all that to sign as authority.
She being as Cheryl?
Yes.
Yes, she is appropriately licensed as treasurer. We handed off the treasurer me to Cheryl, I think in April, toward the middle of April. So Cheryl now has that, and she has the CSBO licensure.
Cheryl, you're comfortable with this. You've reviewed it. You're comfortable. We're putting your expertise on the line. You're comfortable. Okay. I just want to hear it.
Okay, that was Cheryl's. Now we're on the second one with Dave.
Yeah, this is Dave.
This is Dave.
Oh, I'm sorry.
But similar. Dave
similar situation.
Yeah.
You're fine. Yeah. Just seven. Okay. Okay. Roll call.
Mr. Ellis.
Yes.
Mr. Escalante?
Yes.
Mr.
Buckle?
Yes.
Mrs. Clark?
Yes.
Mr. Elder?
Yes.
Mrs. Nelson?
Yes. 2016-2017 board meeting calendar. May I have a motion to approve the 2016-2017 Board of Education meeting calendar as presented?
Move it.
Second.
Okay, this is a calendar where we have the draft. It's the first and third Monday we're moving to in order to free up opportunities for others to leapfrog the other meetings. Mm-hmm. District 87, the Village Board, and Park District. Correct? Park District?
There were a couple. I can't remember what it was.
Yeah. So, that's it. Any discussion? I think we all talked about it. Roll call, please.
Mr. Buckle?
Wait.
I'm sorry.
I'm just going to say something really quick. I just wanted to know, I know everyone wants it Mondays, but I know that Dr. Gordon and the staff actually, I think, recommended Tuesdays. And Kurt wanted Tuesdays. So I just to point out for my fellow board members that I know a majority of the board disagreed with the recommendation, but I think it's important to note that it is possible to sometimes disagree with the recommendation, because I feel like sometimes I'm always the one disagreeing, but I think it was important to note sometimes we don't always agree.
Right, and well, and I want to. I just want to.
And we gave our reasoning why.
We
and
did,
I respect
right?
That.
Yeah, and I again, it wasn't disagreement as much as it was a reality check for those of us who travel, especially for me in the springtime. It's like Tuesdays, they're gone, and it would be very difficult to attend meetings, and so.
But
so
I was taking an opposite view from the.
Yeah, I appreciate that. I get it.
Recommendation.
I get it.
Absolutely.
And thank you for your.
Thank you for putting that out there.
Thank you for putting that out there.
All right.
Disagree
with me.
Yeah. Just for that meetings okay. Every single week.
Where you disagree.
Monday and Tuesday.
Yeah.
That seems like it's happening.
Monday and Tuesday.
Roll call. Roll call, please.
Mr. Buchholz.
No.
Mr. Escalon.
Yes.
Mr. Alger.
Yes.
Mr. Ellis.
Yes.
Mrs. Clark.
No.
Yes. Okay. First and thirds, and I know that Nancy, you will get us organized around that with our Google Calendar. Thank you. Personnel report. May I have a motion to approve the administration's recommendation to approve the personnel report, which includes employment recommendations, union exempt compensation, and superintendent's compensation as presented.
Okay.
Second.
Okay. So to clarify. We have in front of us the union-exempt compensation and employment recommendation, again, for summer, and then Dr. Gordon's superintendent compensation for the record, which is a 1% increase and an authorized performance bonus of $5,000, as discussed by the board, to take action this week. Any other discussion?
I just want to say, you know, we're giving Dr. Gordon a 1% raise. It's the same that we gave the administrative staff. And I think it's a way to kind of balance the cost of living adjustment with our taxing body to show that, you know, we're being mindful of their dollars, yet at the same time trying to be fair to staff to make sure that it keeps up with inflation. And so I just wanted to add that.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. Okay. Roll call, please.
Mr. Buchholz?
Yes.
Mrs. Clark?
Yes.
Mr. Alger?
Yes.
Mr. Ellis?
Yes.
Mr. Escalante?
Yes.
Mrs. Nelson?
Yes. Items for consideration for future agendas. Being mindful of the fact that we have two meetings left, June 13th and the 27th. And then we have the month of July that we take off. And then we're back in August, which will be the first, actually, right? For August 1st, which is the second.
Then where are you going to be at in the special meeting?
We have a special meeting. Yeah, we have to figure that out. So we have a lot going on already.
Yep.
Anything you want to add? Or, again, email, as we've done. Okay. You know, to send me anything. Upcoming meetings, we have June 13th, 2016 Board of Education regular meeting, 7 o'clock here at the Central Services Office, and June 27th, 2016 Board of Education regular meeting, 7 p.m. again here at Central Services. Okay. May I have a motion to adjourn to closed session under Section 2C, Item 1, the appointment, employment, compensation, discipline, performance, or dismissal of a specific employee or legal counsel for the public body, Section 2C, two collective negotiating matters or deliberations concerning salary schedules for one or more classes of employees, Section 2C3, discipline or removal of an occupant of a public office or appointment of an individual to fill a vacant public office, and Section 2C, the placement of individual students in special education programs and other matters relating to individual students. May I have a motion?
Motion.
Second.
Roll call. Sorry.
Mr. Escalante?
Yes.
Mr. Alger?
Yes.
Mr. Ellis?
Yes.
Mrs. Clark?
Yes.
Mr. Buchholz?
Yes.
Mrs. Nelson?
Yes. The board will be taking action when it returns from closed session. It is now 9:55 p.m., and the board is back in open session. The action we will take is the following. May I have a motion to approve the memorandum regarding health aides as presented and described by Dr. Gordon and Ms. Campbell and signed by AFSCME Local 1334.
Motion.
Second.
Discussion.
Is it?
Wait, did we open that in another open session?
We just did, yes.
Yeah,
we did that, yeah. We're good.
Okay. Lori, you want to?
So, in the spring of 2016, as you know, District 41 decided to reorganize the staffing for health offices. This change was due to changes in the law regarding administration of medication and the increasingly complex medical needs of our students. The board effectuated a reduction in force honorable dismissal of the health aides. Impact bargaining with AFSCME ensued and the exclusive bargaining representative for these staff. This MOU is a result of the bargaining. It provides extended recall for some, recall by district-wide seniority for some, support and payment of fees to obtain proper licensure for some, and placement into special education aid positions for some.
Okay. Any other discussion? Thank you, Lori.
I have a statement. I don't think it's discussion, but I'd like to say that this is the problem with unfunded mandates. That this was caused by a change at a state level, that is forcing us to do this. We're doing everything we can to try to help out these particular individuals affected by it, but it's going to drive up the cost in the district, and it's because we have unfunded mandates that things like this happen.
I would concur. In the end, it's like you said, more complex student needs, et cetera, certainly a part of it, but yeah, I would agree. All right, roll call, please.
Mr. Ellis?
Yes.
Mrs. Clark?
Yes.
Mr. Buckle?
Yes.
Mr. Escalante?
Yes.
Mr. Elger?
Yes.
Mrs. Nelson?
Yes. All right, that will be it for action tonight. We are now going to make a motion to return to closed session. May I have a motion to return to close to adjourn the open meeting to closed session for the appointment, employment, compensation, discipline, performance, or dismissal of a specific employee or a legal counsel for the public body, discipline or removal of an occupant of a public office or appointment of an individual to fill a vacant public office, the placement of individual students in special education programs and other matters relating to individual students, and negotiation. Collective negotiating matters or deliberations concerning salary schedules for one or more classes of employees. May I have a motion?
Motion.
Second.
Roll call.
Mr. Buckle?
Yes.
Mr. Escalante?
Yes.
Mr. Elger?
Yes.
Mr. Ellis?
Yes.
Mrs. Clark?
Yes.
Mrs. Nelson?
Yes. 9:58 p.m. The board will not be taking action when it returns.